And welcome to the first episode of Survivor Global, aka SG with SG, where we are covering US Survivor for the first time on the International Survivor Hap-Up feed with international guests. So I am your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about episode 4 of Island of the Idols and kind of the pre-swap at large. Kind of worked out well that we're swapping next week and we kind of wrap up the swap in a neat little package. But to do that, we have Survivor Global's first ever guest, and we couldn't have done any better than the recent winner of Australian Survivor Season 4. Please welcome the great Pia Miranda. Pia, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to talk about US Survivor.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're here.
And that's the best thing about winning or like being a part of Survivor, because finally, like, I can talk about it to more people than just my husband on the couch. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, no, that's why you should. I always thought, like, I never wanted to go on Survivor, but if I were ever to go on, it would be to get voted out first, which I would be. And then at least I can maybe be on a podcast. But now that I have the podcast, I'm definitely never going on.
You never go on. You never know. All that, you know, I was going to be voted out first. You might actually be a little sneaky one and win.
No. I've only got the first part of what you said. I would definitely be out first, and there's no second part of that sentence to me. But you know, the season did end. We spoke to you like about 3 weeks ago on your deep dive, and now you're watching a new Survivor season. So what's that experience like with a different season that isn't yours and kind of watching it back?
Oh, look, it's really fun. You know, the funniest thing is I said to Luke, my husband, on Thursday night when I was watching it, I said, oh, nothing's changed. Like, I'm still sitting here with a glass of red wine in my hand talking about everyone's strategy, like saying they should have done this, they should have done that. So I've pretty much gone back to, you know, my old ways, and it's just sort of I really can still watch Survivor with the same set of eyes. Nothing's changed, which it hasn't changed my love for it. It's probably grown it. So that's a great thing.
Yeah, and the best part is, yeah, as you said, now you get to say they shouldn't have done that, but to an audience, which is the fun
I know.
Part.
Like, finally, I was like, finally people care what I think outside this house.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we're going to get into, I think, like, we're going to dig into the vote and Nora on Island of the Idols. This episode, I thought, was, like, really, really fun. There was so much going on. But more broadly, before we do, what are you thinking of the season so far?
I mean, I'm really enjoying the season, but what I'm finding frustrating about this season is obviously they've been told that they can't tell anyone back at camp about Island of the Idols, but I don't know why they haven't put that in the cut or in the show. Like, it sort of takes away a lot of the jeopardy. Like, if, you know, if Sandra and Rob had said to the contestants, oh, if you tell anyone back at camp about Island of the Idols, then you'll lose a vote or something, that would become part of the show. Whereas it's this weird elephant in the room where you're like, can they tell someone? Can they not tell someone? Why is no one talking? Now you've got multiple people coming back who've been there, but they don't seem to be having a discussion about it. So I'm finding that kind of a bit weird. How do you feel about it?
I completely agree. I find it icky. Like, that's the word I would use. Like, in Vince's exit press last week, and Rob asked him, would you have been able to tell about Rob and Sandra and the Island of the Idols if you could? And he was like, you're putting me in a hard position and I can't answer that. And I'm like, ooh, you can't answer that. Like, that's gross to me. Like, that's so much production interference. And I think I gave the show the benefit of the doubt up until the last possible moment. I was saying 2 weeks ago on the voicemails, like, I don't know if they've mandated that they can't tell them. Maybe they're just, like, highly persuading them. But it really does seem mandated. And I'm glad you brought it up, because I wanted to ask a player like you, who is so social and so considered and is not out there throwing out lies for the sake of lies, and to come back from that and to be picked randomly, as they've three or four of them have been, and as a fourth could have been this week if they had chosen to pick out of a bag, to be picked randomly to do that and come back and you can't tell Janine or your allies about this, I feel like that is the antithesis of the game you were trying to play, and would really, really change that up in a very negative way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just, you know, firstly, I think usually I know with us, when you leave Survivor, you've got like a 30-day sort of contract, so you can't really talk production in that time. But then after
We're out of the 30 days.
So I'm out of it now. So, but I think for those players, maybe they're still in that holding period. And so maybe once the season ends and time goes on, they might be able to talk about it. Maybe. I don't know. But yeah. Look, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, if I'd gone and then I'd come back and they said, you can't tell anyone, I think I would still just say to, I mean, like, my whole game is about being really social and having really close yeah. relationships. So I think I would still be like, something's out there and I can't tell you what it is. I'm not allowed to. But, you know, I'm lying to the tribe or something, you know, something. I just don't think I'd come back and say this great lie to everybody, knowing that other people are going to go out there. But I don't know whether they're cutting that out. Like, sometimes, you know, editing can be really interesting in Survivor, where you watch it back and you're like, oh, that's not what happened, or I did have this conversation with this person. So perhaps they're cutting that stuff out to try and sort of keep the mystery. I don't know. But yeah. It is icky. I agree with you. It's icky.
It's too much. And you know, I definitely criticized Elizabeth first episode because it was like, funny. Why would you lie about that? Someone's voting in 3 days. And then it started becoming more and more obvious. Like, for me, it's like production saying, okay, 5 of you have to lie about your profession. We've picked you at random. You have to lie about your profession, but you can't tell anyone that we've made you do this. It's like a production twist, right? And also not telling the audience that this is a twist as part of the game. So these 5 idiots are like lying about their profession for no reason, as far as we can tell. And then everyone wonders why they can't connect. Like, that's how I feel about it. And I do think that mistakes have been made. We'll talk about Nora. You can't blame production for that. Vince, I think, also made mistakes. I agree. There are ways to possibly be much more honest within the confines of what you're allowed. I do think Vince with the 2 tribal idols should have been like, I got an idol. You couldn't exactly tell how, but could have told a lot of it. I'm playing it tonight. There's still honesty that can be had there, and there still are mistakes that have been made by some of the players who have gone. But the fact that they, you know, they're put in this position where you have to lie, maybe they're not thinking about being truthful in these other ways, and that's on them. But I do think production is leading them down this like lying path, and that's what they end up doing. So I have to blame production quite a bit for that.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, clearly they're cutting around some stuff. Like, there's no way that 2 people are not going to come back from the Island of the Idols and at least give each other looks or whisper something. You know what I mean? Like, that's just going to happen. There's a lot of downtime out there. So I feel like this is one of those situations where production's way too much involved. But I don't know why they would cut that out. Like, I think that would add to the excitement of the show if every person who went out there got this ultimatum, like, if you tell anyone about Island of the Idols, you'll get kicked off, or, you know, something to make sense as to why everyone's keeping their mouth shut, other than, you know, having this sort of, it makes you think about the production, which you don't want to think about when you're watching Survivor.
Yeah, I wonder what the penalty is. I think it should just be something, if they want to keep the secret of the reveal of Rob and Sandra, which I don't agree with as it is, I think it's much more important for the players to decide their own gameplay and their own culture than to have people come around, like Nora came around in this episode, like, oh my God, you guys, are, you know, as everyone has said, she definitely didn't know who they were, which is funny, but it's not worth the production interference. Like, I definitely think that it should just be, if they want to keep that, Rob and Sandra say, you've won an idol and the idol's invalid if you tell people about us. And then at least you can make the choice. You might say, okay, I would rather tell my allies than have an idol, which I do think a player like you would benefit from, because I think, you know, the social game was more important to you than mechanisms.
Yeah.
And then you have the choice. But to just make it like there's an off-screen penalty, we're not making it a part of the game, and it just... Yeah, I'm glad if we've had the opportunity to rant about it. I'm glad you feel the same way, because icky is the only word I have.
I know, me too, because I think that, like, it would be way more interesting if people knew that Rob and Sandra were there, and if people knew that you could win an idol. Like, that would make it crazy, but someone has to go. Yeah. So I think, honestly, they're sort of sacrificing this great story just so people can, we can watch people get surprised by seeing Rob and Sandra. Like, I honestly think that's probably what it is. Like, they want everyone to be like, oh my God, it's Rob and Sandra. But once you have that once, you've got it. You don't need to see it like 10 times over. But it was funny seeing Nora go. Yeah. Nora saying, I definitely know who you guys are. I'm thinking, you don't know who they are.
Well, I got chills when Elizabeth first came out, and the chills are diminishing. Like, how many times am I going to see someone see that it's Rob and Sandra? Like, it's not that interesting. And I think it's part of the same thing with US Survivor, where production is very, very much wanting their narrative to go ahead. And they think that's what the most interesting thing is. But as you said, there are other interesting things that could have come out. People at camp finding out or believing it or not believing it. They should have just trusted that story.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough this week to speak to the Survivor South Africa series director, LaRue Buerta, and he very much looks at the game like, let the players decide, and that thing will be inherently interesting. Find the intrigue in what the players are deciding for themselves rather than trying to create your own intrigue. And he agreed that, like, they're inserting their arm way too much. And I think we've now beaten the point to death. The people get that we don't like it, but it's absolutely too much. So I'm glad we got to discuss it.
Yeah. Look, I do think that's what I love about, I do find American Survivor generally that the gameplay, for me, it lets it happen in a more natural way. Whereas, you know, in Australian Survivor, sometimes all the backstories and stuff, I don't enjoy. So that's what I've always loved about American Survivor. But then that's sort of been taken away. Now I'm just thinking about production. So anyway, we've had a rant. Yeah. We agree.
Watch Survivor South Africa. That's still the purest of all the forms, I think.
I should. Yeah. It comes up so much. So it's, I think, so good. I might go and watch it.
You have to. But, you know, beyond Island of the Idols and the twist and all of it, this cast, I think, has really come to play. It's really delivered. Like, is there anyone that you're really, really liking on the cast and on the opposite side, maybe not liking?
Look, I'm really loving Lauren. I just think she did a really good job with getting rid of Molly. I thought that was great. And then last night when she, when Nora was at the reward and Lauren's like, Nora's sitting out. No, you're sitting out. Like, just really quickly. And she must have power because Nora didn't even fight back. She went, okay, I'm sitting out. So that sort of shows me that she's got some kind of power in the tribe, but she's smart enough that, you know, she made a big move last week and then, oh, not last week, but, you know, she made it, was it last week?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
Which would have been like yesterday if this was Australian Survivor.
Yeah, exactly. So she made this big move and now she's sitting back, which is really clever gameplay. It's like, if you make a big move, don't make another one. Just sit back, chill out, work out what you're going to do. But you can definitely tell that she's got power and she's got friends in the tribe. So I'm pretty keen to see where she goes.
Yeah, the Nora thing, we'll talk about Nora. Like, they definitely could have shown us a scene which was kind of like probably everyone being like, we're not making her the caller, right? Like, I think Lauren definitely led it, but it kind of seemed like a group consensus. But I love that they just shocked the audience with that. Like, not even to be like, okay, Jason is the caller, but to sit her out completely.
Yeah.
And to blindside her seemingly with that seemed really harsh, but also hilarious.
I know, like, clearly they'd have a conversation beforehand. They're like, this is not happening. Like, I loved Laura's confessional. So it was just funny to see Nora just not even fight, she didn't have a comeback for it. She hadn't thought that far ahead. Like, what if they don't let me do it? So
they couldn't. It was part of the twist, right? Like, she's like, you can't.
Right. I mean, I thought, you know, I thought if I was Nora, I would have waited. This is a thing. Like, if you have what I'm feeling is that there are no really tight alliances yet. I mean, it's by this time, you should have at least one or two people, I feel like, that you're really tight with. So, you know, if you were allowed to tell or weren't allowed to tell Island about Island of the Idols, you could come back like and say to your two closest allies, like, I have to become the caller. So I'm going to say something at the challenge and then you guys have to back me up. Mm. You know, that would have been better to keep it in a small group, but I feel like when you don't have a tight alliance, you don't have that opportunity.
Yeah, there's unfortunately, you know, she doesn't really have anyone to back her up except maybe Jason, and Jason, you know, has his own issues, like, in terms of backing her up and having power there. So
yeah,
hard one for her. And I want to talk about Nora, but I do want to get into, like, I think the headline of the episode, which is the Lyro vote, because you say about tight alliances, and I was ready to come into this podcast with you and be like, the sorority sisters, those three, Elizabeth, Missy, and Chelsea, who seem to hang out a lot, especially in the secret scenes. I'm like, this is the new Charlie's Angels. I can see it. And then they cut Chelsea, led by Missy, in this one episode. And I know there's been a lot of debate around, I think, I mean, there has been debate. There's definitely been debate. Missy got the fishy in terms of the move. And I think she's definitely been credited with the move. Did you like this from Missy?
I mean, what I did like for Missy is that she wanted to make a big move and she wanted to break up what she saw as a power couple, but they didn't really seem like a power couple to me yet. Like, you know, it's very early to kind of call someone a power couple. Mm. But what I did like is that she changed the vote, you know, she was just sort of, she changed the vote to Chelsea, and she really was there, you know, just changing it up, really throwing people's names out there. And usually when that happens, usually your name comes up. Like, I was so surprised that people didn't go, well, hang on a second. Like, Elaine didn't go, hang on a second, we really need to get rid of Missy, you know. So the fact that that didn't happen means that she must have some kind of pull in that tribe. So I did like that because it showed me that she has a lot of power and she has really tight alliances that she can, you know, change it up and throw people's names out. I mean, she went from Dean to Chelsea pretty quickly. But I didn't think it was a smart move. I mean, I just think, you know you're going to tribe swap. So if you're going to save Karishma, then make sure you make Karishma feel like she's part of your gang. So to save someone and ostracize them at the same time seemed really dumb to me. Like, it just didn't seem like a smart move because, you know, in tribal, she's just telling Karishma off and you're like, you're just about to go to tribe swap. She is going to flip on you guys. Like, it could have been a smart thing if you really went up to Karishma and like, let's be mates. Let's, you know, let's stick together. You're part of our girl gang. We've just got to get rid of Chelsea because we're going to tribe swap, you know, something like that. But I think to let someone feel ostracized and keep them around is just not a smart move.
Yeah, I mean, Karishma should flip on them. Like, they have not made it clearer in every single sense of everything, how much on the out she is, like, socially, verbally, in the votes. Like, it was the three men that voted for Karishma on the split last week. So could Miss, and maybe she did, but could Missy have gone to Karishma and said, that was the boys, that wasn't the girls, you're still in with the girls. And but, like, instead, when she comes back, we see very much they're like, do you know what just happened, Karishma? And she's like, oh, I get it. You guys are great. Like, she's been defeated by this tribe.
Yeah.
And even, like, the way Missy talks about Karishma, she calls her annoying as hell. Like, she doesn't like Karishma. There's no, like, authentic connection there. Like, I'm looking at this move and I'm thinking, I don't think it's that hard to say Chelsea, a friend, an ally, even if she is a power couple with Dean, which I think was overblown, but even if that is true, have a friend or an ally who might have a threatening aspect, you know, in her relationship with Dean down the road, you can work with for the next 3 weeks, rather than someone you don't seem to like and don't seem to connect with, a possible enemy, someone who could be coming for you, who you've completely alienated. Like, I really can't endorse what Missy was doing in this episode. And I love Missy, and I was willing, and I, before the episode, I thought, you know, she's with the girls, but she's also got a side thing with Erin. She seemed to really have cultivated, like, a really good spot for herself at the top of the status quo. So that's why I'm confused about why you would try to break the status quo when you're at the top of it. You know, when you guys, you know, flipped on the 47, you were at the bottom, you clawed your way in, and then you maintain that status quo for a while. I know Australian Survivor is a longer game, but say 11, I don't think that you need to be blindsiding a very close ally, possibly one of your closest allies. That's certainly how Chelsea seems to still see it, you know, in the ex interviews, to do that when she wasn't doing anything that threatening, to keep someone who rightly will flip on you at a swap that is definitely coming, because if you haven't swapped by episode 5 in Modern Survivor, it would become historic. So last week they voted out Vince in the name of tribe unity, and that made sense. I'm so confused as to why that stopped this week.
I know. I feel like the thing is, in this time of blindsides, everyone's looking at the strong players as like the threats, but it's actually the weaker players that are the threats. So
Karishma's almost definitely in the final three. Her or Nora or both are in the final three right now.
Totally. And so you've got, it's sort of that silly thing of like, you know, you're strong, you're in a power couple, but those people are going to get taken down. Like, someone like Karishma at some point, she's going to be a really powerful ally for the first person who actually gives her the time of day. And so I just think that whole thing, it's like, it's blindside era. Like, someone like Karishma, and you're right, someone like Nora is a really, you know, strong player. And Karishma doesn't seem stupid. I mean, I feel like everyone's giving her a hard time, but, you know, she might be so on the outs. You know how sometimes you feel so on the outs, you actually can't crawl your way out of that kind of mental state?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I mean, I feel like that might be what's going on. Saying that, you know, apparently she doesn't do anything around camp, but I feel like for me, possibly if she gets a chance and gets a little bit of confidence, she actually might make a move. And if she makes a really good move and then sticks around, that's a really good story and that's a good resume.
And I hope that she does, because in the preseason press, Karishma there is night and day to what I'm seeing on the screen. I was worried in the preseason stuff that Karishma was going to be too fiery and too feisty. Like, she came out really strong. And I just think that she's honestly just like a victim of her situation right now. Like, she's not found her people at all. She feels completely left out. She feels socially like she's, you know, not with anyone. She probably doesn't have a friend. Even Nora and Jason have each other. I don't know who Karishma has in the current, you know, setup of Lyro. So she just seems completely defeated by being in Lyro. But she is a very smart person. She has a lot of fire to her, but she's just lost it. And I think that she could definitely maybe find her people on the other side, and then she actually will be a force to be reckoned with. I feel like, you know, kind of underestimate her at your own risk. Like, Nora is someone who also might make it to the end, but I don't know if she has the strategic chops that Karishma could bring if she just is, as you said, just able to change her mindset and get herself out of the hole that she's just, like, shrouded by at the moment.
Yeah, she could do a Natalie and just all of a sudden get halfway and then, you know, her game could really become strong. And if she does that, she's a really, really dangerous player. So I don't know why Missy couldn't see that, because it's clear that something weird is going on in that tribe. And I really feel like, you know, I know what it felt like when I turned up on my first couple of days and I really felt on the outs. It's really hard to sort of keep your chin up and keep smiling through that when you don't get along with people. But, you know, she hasn't had the opportunity to find a really tight alliance, which is what I did. So, you know, I can sort of understand how she must be feeling, because if I was stuck in my tribe and, you know, I was stuck with the 47 and all my allies went, I'd want to jump off her.
Yeah.
I'd want to jump off the Tower of Terror and just end it all, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll be interested to see what happens next week with her and if she does flip and if she can actually connect with someone.
Yeah, and I think it's such a good point. As you said, Missy didn't bring her in. If you're going to save her, then at least have her somehow replace Chelsea, who was a close ally, as another close ally. Like, she seemed to be thinking, like, at times that she could use her as a vote, not work with her, but use her, and at other times have her as a buffer, as another safe vote if they would go to tribal again, which seems unnecessary. Like, this is the buffer. Vote her out right now. I just think that it was best for everyone to go in as a tight seven. You're already down in numbers. Take out Karishma now. Obviously, Dean is alienated. Karishma's not with you. It's very, very fractured for a tribe that's already the minority going into, you know, a very predictable swap. And I'm so interested to hear your thoughts, again, as someone who's a very considered player, on the narrative we heard the whole episode, which was people, no one's playing. Everyone needs to start playing. I'm like, it's been all blindsides all the time, and it's day 11. And I worry that that was a really big reason for making the move, because that is not a legitimate, to me, reason for making a move, especially on day 11, where no one on the jury is going to credit this, you know, to give you a vote as well.
Yeah, because, you know, like, in those early days, not everyone sees your game. So if you do too many blindsides too early, then it's really, sure, it's part of your resume, but it's really the second half of the game that people remember, because you're all together. You know, it's the jury that you want to impress. And I feel like this is just a tribe addicted to blindsides. Like, I don't know. I mean, I felt that when I was out there a little bit. Like, people wanted to make crazy moves and do big things. And I was sort of, you know, I'd be like, I'm not here to make good television. I'm here to win. And so I think there are two different ways you can play the game sometimes. I think, you know, since the days of Boston Rob, it's really hard to make great television and be a winner. You can do it, but, you know, it's sort of that thing of people. I remember in my final tribal, someone asked me a question. They said, when did you go and just tell a really massive lie just to shake things up around camp and just to screw with people's heads? And I'm like, never, because yeah. I wanted to win, you know, like,
yeah.
I'm not going to do that, because that's great TV, but I'm not going to do that. So, you know, I think that it might just be a whole bunch of people who are just really addicted to blindsides and maybe love the game of Survivor too much and have forgotten that it's actually a game where you really have to be considered, think about your moves, get a group of people together who trust you, and then from that point, then you can, you know, later in the game, then you can start to take them down.
Yeah, and you guys really did have a good balance. It was like, you know, you flipped it on the 47 and then you went down the line. And even though Dave was being shady, 1,000 times more shady than Chelsea, you know, gave them any warrant here to vote them out, you didn't vote him out, you know, you maintained that. And then, you know, you got to the merge and you obviously, you know, stuck with Champion Strong, and then you made the blindside. And I know we spoke in the deep dive about you've gone back and forth, like, you know, did you wait too long to maybe you should have taken out Abby? And I get that it's a delicate balance.
Mm.
But this tribe, I think, is like well off the balance. Like, the teeter-totter from last week is just all the way on one side. There's no balance. It's just all blindside all the time. I think that people forget that actively playing it slow is actively playing in itself. It's just a different way to play.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that, you know, you can still, I mean, we did a couple of blindsides early on, you know, with Nova and Susie and all that kind of stuff. But, you know,
it felt necessary to me, though. They didn't come out of nowhere, you know.
They didn't come out of nowhere. And so, and we did them as a unified group. That's a fun way to do it. That's a fun way to do a blindside, is when you're just a unified group and you know you're going to take someone down, and it's great. Whereas here, you know, you've got it seems like they're ostracizing a new person every week, and this is not a smart way to play. Like, you want to have people who you trust so that when you get to merge, then you can start turning on people. And yeah. I feel like, I mean, I enjoy it. I just feel like we missed something in the edit, maybe. Like, I didn't feel like Chelsea and Dean were that much of a power couple. It's freezing out there. Like, you have to sleep in someone's arms. And Chelsea wasn't like, oh, you know what, he's my man. She was, you know, she said, I'm not here for any showmans. So I just feel like it was a weird move.
It's so interesting, the perception, because as they say, oh, Chelsea's 27 and Dean's 28, like, in love, get married right now. And, you know, like, you and Janine were a power couple, like, you know, Abby was there too, but you and Janine were a power couple.
It was Janine and I.
Yeah. And the whole game. And if Janine was a man and, you know, and you were both single, would that have been allowed to fly? Like, it's crazy, because a power couple is a power couple. If you're a duo out there as a reliable, loyal vote, that's threatening. But it's just the perception of, you know, maybe two women or even two men or whatever isn't going to be looked at the same as a single guy and a single girl. They even say, like, Tom and Elaine are apparently really close, but they're both, you know, attached. You know, they're not seen as, like, this actual couple. And then, you know, younger people like Chelsea, who she said in Extra Press, she was like, if you're a young single girl, go out there and say you have a boyfriend, because that's so threatening to people, I guess, the threat that it could be a romantic relationship. Even though we saw Chelsea say, and it seems pretty genuine from her Extra Press, that she really was not interested in a showman's.
Yeah, and look, honestly, Survivor is the unsexiest environment I've ever been in my life. Like, if you're having some kind of, like, wacky relationship out there, like, hats off to you, because we all talked about it, like, we are just dead below the waist. Like, there's nothing going on, you know what I mean? It's really gross and unsexy. So, you know, I think she's right, though. I think, I mean, it's funny, from playing Survivor, I don't want to get into, like, a whole feminist rant, but, you know, you really do see how you sort of have to deal with a little bit of sexism when you're on the beach, a little bit of sexism possibly in the edit, and a lot of sexism when you get out and the show is shown. So I think she's right that a young, gorgeous girl going out there and, you know, having a friendship and possibly an alliance with a young, gorgeous single guy is just going to put a target on her back, and unfairly so, because she's a smart girl. It's like, it's sort of underestimating her by thinking that she's ruled by her hormones or whatever it is. She's using her brain. But, you know, I think that's just one of those things. And she's absolutely right. She should have said she had a boyfriend.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking for me because, okay, at least at the beginning of the episode, it was like, look, people think they're a couple, but, you know, very, very rarely are they going to go after the guy. And they actually were. And it was like, well, at least Dean is suffering for this. Not like the showman's girlfriend demise is like the worst demise, especially when you're not even in a showman's. It's always the girl, except for Matt Elrod. But, like, she wasn't even in a showman's. And then it ended up being her. And the fact that it came from this awesome, strong, diverse and dynamic women's alliance that was led by Missy, it was like the worst of everything for me.
It was depressing. Did you find it depressing? I found it really depressing. I thought when they were going after Dean, I'm like, yeah, that's because they want to keep their woman strong. Yes. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, Missy's like, we should get Chelsea. It just didn't make any sense to me. And I found it sad because I really wanted to see this group of women stick together and just rule it. Because I really feel like Chelsea would have been cool if they got rid of Dean and said, you guys were too close. She's not stupid. She would have just stayed with her own alliance and just been cool about it.
Yeah. I thought it was funny when they were going after Dean, because I'm like, these are the sorority sisters who think a guy, like, isn't good for you. Like, stop texting him, but on Survivor you can vote him out, right?
Totally.
So even though I wouldn't have agreed with that, because I really think Karishma was, like, so obvious, I still would have felt like I saw part of that. As you said, they probably could have brought Chelsea back in. And then they, you know, Missy's going for Chelsea when her whole problem with the Dean Chelsea thing that we heard of was Dean is taking Chelsea away from me, possibly, and away from a girl's thing. And then she votes out Chelsea completely. Like, I don't understand that.
It makes no sense. And now she's lost Chelsea and Dean, because really, if Chelsea's tight with Dean, she could have used Dean's vote, you know. So I just don't understand what was going on. I thought at first it was one of those weird editing things, you know, where it's just so easy that it's Karishma, so they had to create some drama.
I completely thought so too. I was interesting for a boring vote, but no.
Totally, but it really happened. And I just, even for Elaine to jump on it seemed weird to me, because it felt like she was all about the women and all about unity.
I do have a theory as to why Elaine and Elizabeth did go with this and didn't go with Dean. Before I do, I just wanted to say just a last thing on Missy, like, just because I love Missy and I thought she was in such a good spot, and I do think she's a good player, and I know she got the fishy this week, and people credit that she got her way,
Yeah.
I don't know if you necessarily want to get your way so early and put your foot down. And I don't agree with what she did. And I think that my issue as well was her reads all episode. She was like going to people with plans that they really didn't like. And I don't think she could read that they weren't really appreciating what she was offering. And that to me was another just a disappointment.
Yeah, that's not great when really she's sort of in her own head so much that she's not looking at how people are. Because I think when you're on, like when you're playing Survivor, you really have to have good instincts about mm-hmm. how people are feeling. A lot of the time, there's some people who have really readable faces and some people who don't. And I feel like she's got no instincts as to how people are feeling towards her.
Which I wouldn't have said last week. So that was disappointing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I, the credit, obviously it's her move. When I hate the move, I'm almost discrediting her.
I'm excited to see where she goes from here because I do actually really love Missy.
Oh, definitely. I hope she can rally from this. Like, I don't think it was good. But, I definitely hope she can rally, but have to discredit her here. But in terms of Elizabeth and Elaine, because I kind of do have it broken down, because I think they were really at the center of things.
Yeah.
And I was so actually impressed with that because I thought they were really at the center of the web. And there's been a lot of talk of like, well, why did they go with this when they really didn't want Dean? And you would think they would even less so want Chelsea. A lot of people said they ran out of time, plan Z. And maybe also they didn't want to keep putting their foot down. As we say, like maybe you don't want to keep getting your way. So if they've already put their foot down on Dean, they might feel like they've kind of like used up their capital for that week, which I completely would credit. Like I totally get that you don't want, especially as a woman, we go back to that feminist rant, but like you don't really want to be putting your foot down as Missy did in this episode to get your way so early. Even though I think they definitely should have taken out Karishma, but it seemed really not to be in their hands. But I do think that the reason they might have gone with Chelsea over Dean was because of Tom. I think Tom here was actually a key cog that's going missing a little bit. Elaine especially, and I think Elizabeth, they seem close to Tom. They didn't want to leave out Chelsea and Tom in the Dean vote. But what ended up happening with the Chelsea vote was at least they didn't leave out Tom, who might have been more keen to take out Chelsea than a boy in Dean. So if Aaron and Missy already have Tom because it's taking out a strong girl and keeping a guy, so we might have been on board with that, then they have Karishma and Tom, Missy and Aaron. That's a strong plurality now. That's, 4 of 8. So at that point, they kind of have to jump on and become the 6, whereas before, when it was Tom, Chelsea and Dean versus Karishma, Missy and Aaron, they were like a swing vote.
Yeah.
Within the middle of that. So I do think maybe that's what everyone's missing is actually Tom, who we didn't see a lot of in this episode, might have been pretty crucial.
No, I think that makes complete sense. I think you're right. And, there is that point when you're playing where you go, I don't like the vote, but I have to go along with it because at least it's not me. And I'm going to prove myself to these people. And then, every time you come back from tribal, it's like a refresh. It's like a reset button. So you go, okay, I'll just get through this vote and then I'll try and see how I can reset this.
Yeah. Well, you already put your foot down. Like, we really just don't want Dean. Like, let's go with Karishma. It's the best and easiest vote for all of us. We're definitely swapping next week. And then they're like, okay, fine. You've said no to Dean. We're going to go with Chelsea. They're like, that's the opposite. Like, you've gone in the wrong direction of it, but that's worse.
Like, doesn't make, like, and when you're out there, you know exactly the day that Tribe Swap's coming, you know exactly the day that the merge is coming. So you know this stuff is coming. So you don't want to leave a free agent, angry free agent, going to Tribe Swap. It just makes no sense.
Yeah, and US Survivor, like, they're not trying to play with you. Like, it's going to be a tribe swap in episode 4 or 5. It always is. Like, they're not, it's not like, wow, the tribe swap came so early or so late that, like what happened to Cass in Cambodia, they merged super early. They really got her. That's not what this is. This is super predictable. Everyone knew was coming. Yeah. You should have played to it. And you did last week with Vince. So why did
Crazy. It's so crazy. I mean, I really think, I feel sad for this Girls Alliance because I actually think, if they kept, if they kept Vince, it could have worked for them as well. But they sort of seem to be fracturing so early. So it's not going to last. And I'd like to see more of Tom because I feel Tom has a bit more pull than we know. Like I feel like he's been chilling out with a flower in his like ear. I'm like, you're playing this game well, but it's just not, we're just not showing it yet. So it'll be interesting to see where, if when we get to see a bit more of Tom, like what he's like. Because I actually think he's playing a pretty savvy game.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree because I think we saw a lot of Elaine and Elizabeth, and I think that they were absolutely crucial here, and I think their votes carried a lot of weight. But I think Tom, all we heard of him was, oh, we're going to leave him out. We really don't want to. So that's important, that his social relationships are that important. Yes. And then by the time the vote had changed, he was in on the vote. So I think that there's a story there that we're not hearing, which is like, Tom's on board, so now we can do it. Or Tom's on board, so now we have to do it because they basically have the numbers anyway if they have 4 of 8. I think that there's like a key cog there that we would be missing.
Yeah. And I do feel like, I mean, I don't know if this is going to happen, but I feel like if Elizabeth and Elaine stay together, then possibly they might become a little bit of a power couple.
I thought they were great in this episode. Like they, especially Elizabeth, who is someone, as I said, I criticized early on Twitter because she made fire against Boston Rob, which made no sense. And now she got snowed by Rob. She got snowed by Rob.
Like, why would she do that?
It's nonsensical, but you know, she got beaten by Rob in her third day out there. And then she lied about the Island of the Idols, which we now know she had to do. So I take back all the criticism for that. And then in this episode, I also really like last episode, actually. I really like the way she handled Karishma at Tribal. She was like, we really didn't intend to make you feel that way. She wasn't defensive. I was like, okay, this girl's got some social chops. And then in this episode, she did something so brilliant and so subtle, which was that people would come to her with a move. She didn't like the move. And then she would say, go, you know, talk to Elaine. Elaine also didn't like the move. They were very much on the same page. And then she would go back and be like, Elaine really didn't like
it. I noticed that. It was so great. I love that when she was like, Elaine's not into this.
Yeah.
They're like, really? So it was a really clever thing to do. And I think the fact that everyone really cares about what Elizabeth thinks, mm-hmm. you know, she's playing a good social game and she's possibly using Elaine as a buffer because Elaine's, you know, she's going to be the Rupert of the season, I think, like just the, you know, or the Toki, you know what I mean? Just like the lovable person that everyone's just on board with. And so I think she can possibly hide behind her because, you know, those really likable players, they tend to not last to the very end. So it'd be a really good matchup, I think. And they're both really, they're enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, I think that they were the two for me. And Tom, I think, is in that. We just didn't get to see it as much. Like, but I think that they were the three, even though I don't agree with the move for anyone. Like, I don't blame them at all. And I actually credit the way that they were, like, socially approached and kind of interacting in this episode. Even the fact that Sandra says about Elaine, like, this one has no idea what's going on. It's like, she actually is at the center of the web. But, like, how great that you just watching her at Tribal Council think that. Because that means that she's convincing you and the tribe members of that. She's actually way more knowledgeable than she comes across.
Yeah, and that's such a great way to play. I mean, I think that's such a good way to play before you get submerged. Like, I definitely did a lot of that when I was out at Contenders Camp. I would, you know, people would, I'd be the one who pretended that I didn't know what was going on so that I could get lots of information and then give it back to Janine and Abby. So I'd be like, I don't really know what's happening. No one told me what the vote is. So I'd pretend that Janine and Abby would tell me what to do and then I'd do it. But really I was just using that so people would trust me and then I could just be a mole. Yeah.
And I'm in this day and age where people are taking out threats for things that aren't even that threatening as we're watching way too early, like you got to do it. You know?
You've got to do it, yeah. And then, you know, you can really go and make moves because you've got all the information that you need. You know, that's how we got Cassie because really we just, you know, she would tell me everything and then I'd go back and be like, we can't trust this girl.
Do you credit Karishma at all for saving herself here or do you feel like she got just like really lucky?
It's hard. I mean, I don't know. Do you reckon she's getting stitched up by the edit?
No.
I feel a little bit like, I feel like she's actually really struggling and I don't really credit her at all for saving herself. Mm. Possibly she had one or two conversations. I mean, you could see her having a conversation with Missy. So clearly Missy had gone to her and said, it's Chelsea, and she's jumped on board. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in that respect, she didn't run around trying to save herself because she knows she doesn't have the alliances and she knows she doesn't have the friends on that tribe. So, you know, maybe just laying low and keeping her mouth shut and going with the vote, you know, possibly that's a credit to her, but I really think she just got lucky.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they did include her on the vote, you know, 6-2 could have been 5-2-1 if they didn't want to.
Yes.
And they could have left her out even more, which they probably shouldn't have done. But, you know, it's risky because if she goes to Chelsea and Dean and is like, you know, she's a free agent, basically. She could have told Chelsea to play her idol, not knowing that Chelsea had one, but if you have an idol, play it. So it's risky, but then also leaving her out of the vote again, I guess couldn't make it much worse. Like, they've left her out so much. Like, why not just go the full 100% just leave her out again?
Leave her out again or just get rid of her. Like, I think she really got lucky. But I'm hoping she can – I mean, I sort of liked what she said at Tribal when she said, you know, this is chaos and chaos is a ladder and I'm hoping to climb myself out of the mess I'm in. So, you know, she clearly understands that she's in a pickle. Mm-hmm. And let's just hope that she can pull something together on the next tribe. If not, then maybe she's just not. It's tough out there. Like, maybe it's just all getting to her.
Yeah, and even if, you know, to have a start like this, even if you find your people at that point, you might be so deflated by the game. I just have to laugh at the way that they're managing Karishma with, like, no tact because, you know, I know that you and Janine really did want to keep Harry before the merge because you didn't want to have to put a vote on Simon, which would have been necessary to protect against an idol, and really just be very clean with that vote. And they're like, look, we'll just pile some votes on Karishma. And we'll
I
just,
know.
You know,
that's the thing. You don't
and go
to
take, a swap.
You don't want to take an angry person to a swap. Like, that was the thing we know when we wanted to save Simon. We were like, we don't want to take an angry – we wanted to get rid of Simon. We're like, we don't want to take an angry Simon to swap. Like, that's a disaster. You don't want anyone to be angry. You want to take happy people. Like, save Harry. Take a happy Harry.
Yeah.
But they're not – no one's trying with her. I mean, I would like to think that if there was a Karishma out there, that I would really see her as a free agent and really be working on her and really be using her as one of my votes and one of my crew, because it just seems like you've got someone wandering around with nobody. That's an extra vote.
I do think they want her as a vote, but I don't think that they've, from what we've seen, put in the social capital to cultivate it as a real genuine vote. Like, it's like, look, she has no one, she's with me, which I guess is technically true for now.
Yeah.
But it has to be so much more than just like, you're a free agent and I'll use you as a vote. It has to be much more like, this is a relationship. These are people, these are human beings. Like, let's see this as a friend rather than just like a vote.
Yeah, because if someone doesn't, if you're not friends with someone, they're not going to feel any kind of loyalty to you. Like, you really have to build friendships and build relationships, and you can't just ostracize people because that's just not a clever way to play, which is weird because some of those people on that tribe are really clever social players, you know, like Elizabeth and Elaine are good socially, and it seems like Tom is pretty good socially as well. So I don't know why they're doing this, but I feel like, you know, she might go early. She might go next, you know, she might sort of go to swap and then they
like
get
a
rid
Wendy.
Of her.
Yeah, like Wendy last season, she was on the outs, and then it was like she still, you know, they got rid of her. But if it had worked out differently, Wendy was coming for them and she was going to take them all down.
Yeah.
So that could happen here as well, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about kind of the mirror image on the other side of the person who was on the outs, and that is Nora, who did so much in this episode. You know, you kind of get like a character piece on each person who goes to Island of the Idols, and like, boy, did we get it this week with
God
Nora.
God bless Nora. Like, if she won, she would like change my, you know how I'm like, oh, you can't be a massive personality and win Survivor. Like, at this point in time, I feel like, I would just imagine if she just pulled it out and won, because she is the funniest television. I'm loving it. I mean, that, how funny was she when she came back? It was the craziest story. It didn't make any sense.
No.
And then she was getting angry at people. Like, that was it when, was it Dan that, like, you know, she sends Dan into like a tree, like, there's nothing in front of you. And then he just whacks into a tree. I'm like, oh my God, Nora, why? Why?
And she was comically bad at being the caller.
Oh, comically bad. And why would you tell people, like, I would say, don't tell people. Tell them at the, because people always change their minds when they're out there. So tell them at the challenge, like, I'll be the caller because I used to be the call, you know, I used to do this in Scouts or something. I don't know. You know what I mean? Just make up a story last minute and be really forceful, and then people will go with it. But if you give them 2 days to think about it and then you practice and then you're terrible at it, it's like, Nora, what are you doing? And also, it wasn't even a good deal. Like, why?
She oh, my God.
She should have. I think I tweeted her out what Sandra said. She's like, think about it. Gee, watermelon.
I love mentor Sandra. She's so sweet to the contestants. It's a different role. She has been a mentor, you know, but Kaylin, Game Changers, and Corny. She finds these, like, younger people usually and does kind of become, like, a mother figure or a mentor figure to them. But to really see it here where, like, you see Boston Rob's face as they're sending Nora off, and Boston Rob is like, oh, dear God. And Sandra's like, you can do it, Nora. Like, she knows she's about to completely collapse, but she's like sending her with that last bit of encouragement before going to confessional to be like, Nora is completely screwed.
Yeah, totally. You can see that. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't break down laughing, because you could see Boston Rob like crack a little bit, like his mouth was cracking, and you could see Sandra going, like, knowing it was a bad deal, just going, honestly, I feel like she was giving her tips to go, come on, start negotiating, like, this isn't a great deal. But Nora was just too excitable, and like, I'm enjoying both of them actually this season in their mentorship roles, but it's just a shame that it's all gotten so crazy.
Yeah, it's not their fault. It's production's fault.
No, yeah. But I mean, they're really great TV. And yeah. It was a really cute scene to sort of have this frenetic character out there jumping on board with, you know, I'm going to do it. They're looking at it like, really? Yeah. So, you know, poor Nora.
Well, I mean, this whole scene. So first, like, to come up on the boat and then someone has to go to Island of the Idols. And I didn't like, because we were told it's finally going to be like a vote, which I've hated the bags. Like, I've hated that it's, you know, definitely, as I've said a million times, give the contestants the opportunity to create their own culture and to make that decision. And then it's like, it's the same Ghost Island thing where it has to be unanimous or you get the out of the bag. Like, don't give people a cop out. You know, in Survivor New Zealand with the outpost, it just had to be a majority, and it ended up being such an interesting way to have how that was decided for good or for bad. And then with no cop out, because you had to send someone and no one was coming to save you.
Right.
So they did obviously vote for Nora, but I hated that they had the out. And I just love this whole scene where everyone's talking to camera about why they don't want to go. And I completely agree with those reasons for them. Cut to Nora, like, I'll go. And then just like straight cut to her on the boat.
It was there was some comic cutting in there. I feel like
the whole editing of this whole sequence was amazing. But I actually really agree with Nora going, even though I've said Island of the Idols is a punishment. You play for what have been kind of weak advantages. This was definitely the weakest. And then you have to lie to your tribe and you're away from camp, as you know, you've spoken about, you know, being away on the Spar Award. Vince was away for 24 hours and then went home. And then you're disconnected. You're a threat. I do think for pretty much everyone, it's like an extreme punishment. But for Nora, who's already on the outs and who could get an idol, like, I actually really think that she should have gone. Like, it was good to put her hand up.
Yeah, I think so. And you know what? You could tell she was really excited to go. So
you could tell.
And you could, I mean, it's funny because I almost feel like she wouldn't have even had the smarts to go up to Kelly and be like, even if you were allowed to talk, it'd be like, how weird was that? You know what I mean? Because Kelly's done really well, I think, in just deflecting from the fact that she's been to Island of the Idol. She came back, she cried, she had it in her bun. She's like, look through my stuff. And then everyone was over it. So, yeah, I think it was a good thing for Nora to do. You know, she's jumping into every opportunity and that's totally reflective of her personality.
I do think Nora's like the one person who could come back from Island of the Idols and if she was allowed, be like, Boston Rob and Sandra were there, and they'd be like, you're crazy. They were like, not totally. Believe you're the only one who could come up with this madness once we tell you who Boston Rob and Sandra are.
Totally. Yeah, she wouldn't even know their names. Like, that guy and the lady from Survivor, I think, are there. I can't remember their names.
Giant heads. They would have been like, this is the third craziest thing you said today, Nora.
It was funny when she was up on the boat. She's like, it's a statue of a handsome man.
Oh my god. So she gets to Island of the Idols and they're told that, you know, this deal was just like the worst deal ever. It's like, okay, convince your tribe to make you the caller, which you couldn't pay me to be the caller. Like, what an unenviable position to be in, where like you, the whole weight of the whole challenge is on you. If you screw up, you might go home anyway. And then all you get is a vote blocker. It's like, wow, if Nora had actually convinced them to be the caller, she would have, and lost the challenge. Like, wow, you would have blocked a vote and gone home 7-1 instead of 8-1. Like, that would have been super helpful. Like, she wouldn't have even had an idol to protect against that terrible situation. And vote blockers, steals, extra votes, that whole family of votes I've spoken about for years is just like really not a good advantage. Like, it's been used well once in David versus Goliath. It was used pretty well in Survivor New Zealand season 2 at the merge to kind of not like they didn't really need it, but to sway the votes and get kind of generate some fear with those numbers. But otherwise it ends up being so situational, so rare that it's going to work. And what you have to get in return is like the worst ever challenge performance. And you have to convince them to do it. Like, they would, even Boston Rob and Sandra were like, really think about if this is worth it. And she was like, it's already done, Rob. I've done it. I've got it. It's done.
I mean, I know. And it's not like, you know, sometimes you can be in those situations. We have them a lot where there's two of you, you know, there's two of you sort of in that tricky position, like the caller or doing the puzzle or something. But if that's you on your own, if that doesn't go well, you're going home. And, like, a vote blocker is not really going to do anything if everyone's loading up on you. I think, like, a vote blocker could be good if you're allowed to tell people, so you can, you know, use it to get people to become loyal to you. Like, hey, I've got a vote blocker today. Mm. Let's do something crazy. Like, that could be an exciting advantage. But because I don't even feel like she'd be allowed to tell anyone, there's no point to it. I mean,
I think,
really
she could,
no,
I think she'd be allowed to tell people she had the vote blocker.
You do?
Not that it was gifted to her by Rob and Sandra from Survivor.
Right, yeah. I mean, that could work if it was sort of, if you could use it to really bring people closer to you. But I don't think that's what Nora would do, because I don't think she's that much of a social player.
I don't think she has a social capital. Like, who is she convincing at that point?
Exactly. I think no matter, even if she thinks she's getting people loyal to her, it's still probably not going to work. But, I mean, just to have that position, that caller position, that is just putting a target on your back. Like, why? Why do it? Don't do it. I wouldn't want to do it. It's not worth it. You know, I would have, like, tried to barter with them for an idol or something, something better. I would have said that's not a good enough deal, because you know you're out there to make deals and get a good deal, get an idol that's, you know, good for three tribal councils, because you're going to a tribe swap, you might get a dodgy tribe swap. It's perfect, then that's worth taking the risk. But yeah, it was not worth taking the risk.
Yeah, and Jeff Pittman pointed out on Twitter that what it should have been is something taken from Survivor South Africa. Is it should have been persuade them to be the caller, because during the challenge, the caller will be able to will have an idol. They'll know exactly where it is that they can bring the, you know, the blindfolded contestants can bring back to them without knowing, which is what they did in Survivor South Africa. Oh. So maybe make it a better advantage than a blocker, because that's a much harder task. But at least it's a little less clunky than like persuade them to be the caller, and then you've, you know, done the task, and it makes it more like you can find an idol in the challenge, but you have to be in this role. I think would have been.
Yeah. And it's weird when she came back, she didn't even say, she didn't say, I have to be the caller, said, I have to choose my position.
So oh my God. Just,
the whole lie got so messy. And then no one could understand. She couldn't understand her life. She's like, what are you talking about? Oh, yeah. You know, it just, it was so messy. And it was really, I mean, I know it was comedic, but I did feel bad for her.
She contradicted herself a lot. They were like, well, what other role could you have been? She was like, there is no other role. I'm the caller. And they're like, but you said you have to choose your role. And she's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess I could have chosen any role. It's like, well, that's directly contradictory to what you said.
I know. And it's just, I think when you're lying in Survivor, just make your lies really simple.
Agreed.
Like, make your lies as small as possible. So just say, I have to be the caller or something. And once you start making these massive lies, it all tumbles down on you.
Yeah, I always think a lie should be like 90% the truth, you know, if you can.
Totally.
And then tweak the details. I mean, we play, you know, on the International Survivor coverage, like name that lie. So like what she should have said. For me, I do think that she definitely shouldn't have taken the task. So that's the first thing. Like, I can't endorse taking the task at all.
No.
But I think she should have come back and said, you know, I had the choice for a team advantage or a personal advantage, and I chose a team advantage. And, you know, the team advantage is that I can tell you what the challenge is going to be. And then if you really wanted to take the task, make persuading them completely independent of the lie. It became too complicated to be lying to them about what happened to you and persuading them in the one breath. So like, come back, make them all feel good. You took the team advantage. You're telling me what the challenge is. We get to practice. And then I like kind of what Michelle Fitzgerald said on the Know-It-Alls, like, you know, then have your other, you know, your other aspect of trying to convince them, which is like, I've had a whole day to think about it. I have all these tactics. Like, I, you know, I would be the best for it. And if you really want to try be the caller, you know, do it separately in a different way after making them feel good with your story. But for me, being the caller is so bad that if they said to me, it's not a choice, this task, you're either going to, you know, persuade them or lose your vote, I would say, take my vote. Like, I'd rather you take my vote for this tribal council than I have to be the caller for the challenge.
I'm the same. Because it's a 50-50. Like, and it can just go wrong if people don't know how to follow instructions, or if you just sort of lose your way. I reckon I'd be terrible. You know, and you got to scream loudly. It's just not, you know.
Nora's good on the decibels, I think. That would have been good. Maybe that would have been a good way to convince them. Like, look, have you ever met anyone louder than me?
I mean, she shouldn't have done the practice run, like, let's be honest, because it was a disaster. Like, she hadn't done the practice.
That was, like, the worst endorsement of her being the caller that she could have done.
And you can't be frazzled. Like, you said Jason was good at it, you know, because he was really calm. But you can't be frazzled when you're being the caller, because it's just not going to work. So she really exposed herself in so many ways, poor Nora. But you know what? She's good she's still here, because she's good TV.
Oh, thank God. This was so fun. They also didn't seem to tell her that she would also have to guide the puzzle, which is like, she not only was she the caller, like that person was also the puzzle maker, which we've seen, especially with Karishma, is like terrible in and of itself if you can't get it done.
Oh yeah, it's a horrible feeling. I had one with Harry where we just couldn't get it done, you know, because sometimes you're just so tired from not eating and stuff. So it's it's tough. Like, do that stuff if you're in a duo, because you know, it's not just going to be on you, but don't do that stuff when you're on your own. Just don't do it.
I don't think she knew she was going to have to do the puzzle, because she said, she's like, so I can tell you all the details of the challenge. And so they're like, okay. And then she's like, the challenge is, you know, you're all blindfolded and you have to bring stuff and then the challenge is over, which was like only really 50% of the challenge. So she's like, the whole thing is I can give you the extreme detail, but it was like a very vague understanding of what the challenge would be.
Yeah. And so I think that was part of it being a stitch up. I think that's part of Rob and Sandra kind of really messing with the contestants by saying, you know, just giving her like, you just have to be the caller, and then having this horrendous puzzle at the end that you had to put together, which looked super hard. I mean, just to describe how to put that together is really difficult. That'd be really difficult.
Yeah. It couldn't have been worse. Like, you have to be the caller and you have to do the puzzle. You're the only one doing the challenge, basically. Like, what a terrible position to be in. Even Elizabeth felt so bad that she'd lost, and she obviously has extreme social capital, and she was still like, you know, devastated by it, you could tell.
And she did good. Like, it's really good when you come back from stuffing up a challenge, if you're really open about it and you're really remorseful. You know, for us, like, that person really didn't go home, because you could just tell how much they cared about the tribe. And I found her sort of just how much she was really repentant after that. It was a really good gameplay.
Yeah. But Nora, you know, she made it so obvious how desperately she needed to be the caller. She couldn't explain why.
The other thing I love about Nora is she's like a yogi. She's like a yoga teacher, but she's like the most stressed out yoga teacher I've ever seen on television. I'm like, what would you be like without yoga? Like, just like freaking levitate. Like, I don't know what's going on there. So, you know, there's so much to love about her, but this is, it's a comedy of errors. And I feel like she's that kind of person that would actually have a sense of humor about it as well, you know. Like, I don't feel bad, kind of just laughing at her a little bit.
She followed me on Twitter last night and started liking all of my tweets about this.
Oh,
I was like, but are we laughing? We're laughing with each other, right? Like, that's the point.
Oh, well, I hope she loves it, because she's really making me happy.
Oh, this was so funny. Every single part of it, they just like completely, the editors were just having so much fun with it, and it's fun when they're having fun with it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know what, she did really well, because she was so ostracized in the early part of the season, you know, when they first got out there, she was really rubbing people up the wrong way. And then I almost feel like everyone else has started to find her funny as well. And so, you know, like, she sort of stopped annoying people, and now she's actually just hilarious Nora. And so I'd like to see where she goes, like what happens with her.
Yeah, I want to watch her on loop forever. She's like, okay, Dan, go forward. You're fine. Just like immediately walks into a tree.
I know, there's a lot. It's so funny. And he was getting, I mean, he's an interesting one. I'm looking forward to seeing more of him, because, you know, he's a talent manager in America. And I don't know if you've met any of those people, but they are like tough and they're really opinionated and they fight to the death for their clients. And, you know, they're big personalities. So I feel like he's really pushing down his personality a lot. And you could see it. Like, you could see it yesterday when Nora was driving him nuts. You could see he just wanted to have a meltdown, but he kind of kept it to himself. So he's interesting. Like, I don't know what. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what goes on with him. Like, he's either going to blow or he's going to just keep a lid on things and be really strategic.
Dan has found, and I don't think he realizes this, but on Going on Survivor, he's found the best talent there is. Like, Nora, you need like yoga with Nora videos.
Where sign it's just her
like
up.
High key yoga. Usually yoga is relaxing. No, like, this is yoga with Nora. This is the most energetic. You're going to need yoga when you're done with the yoga, how stressed out you are after yoga with Nora. That's the gimmick.
It's like the F45 of yoga. Like.
There's only so much you can take of it. It's high energy yoga. This is amazing, I think.
Have a couple of cups of coffee before you get out there. I feel like also she's got no caffeine in her. Like, what's going on? She's got a lot of energy, that lady.
That's her on day 11 of Survivor with no sleep and no food, and it's incredible. Well, with some watermelon, but.
But you could really tell Dan, like, had had enough of this. he was just spinning out and thinking, oh, my gosh. Because, you know, I'm sure in his environment, it's in his working environment, it's really probably acceptable to really blow your top and be like, no, do you know what I mean? Like, and so for him to have to sit on that was quite funny.
He knows he's going to be working with her for years to come. I'm telling you that this is like, this is a money-making venture.
Sign her up, Dan.
Another thing I wanted to talk about was the art of persuasion, because I actually thought this was like a fun segment for the Island of the Idols. It's actually relevant and not simple, like, listening is like, okay, it makes sense, but it's like not, it's not like a skill you really have to learn. And then fire, okay, that was the obvious one. Vince going out in the middle of the night is a bit of, like, it was funny to watch, but it definitely has nothing to do with anything. It was more a symbolic challenge, which ended up, like, teaching him something, which is very circumstantial. It's like, keep calm under pressure is, I guess, true, but also, like, be the right amount of paranoid. And then he went home with an idol in his pocket.
Yeah. So
that was a bit of a mess, a funny mess, but, you know, not super relevant. But the art of persuasion, okay, it's like, this is good, and they did have good lessons here. And I kind of enjoyed the flashbacks. Like, as a Survivor nerd, I'm always happy to see Suri. I'm always happy to see these moments, you know. So I liked it.
That made me happy. Yeah, I know a lot of people didn't like, a few things came up on Twitter, people didn't like the flashbacks. But I liked it, just by getting, you know, so far into so many seasons that we just had these little snippets of memories that were such big moments in Survivor history that it was really nice for me as a viewer. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I love Survivor. Like, one of the things that I love Survivor. One of the things that I love about it is being, you know, 50-ish seasons in internationally and having that history and those, you know, cultural touchstones, you know, that you can draw from, that we love to do in this podcast. You know, this is similar to, you know, whoever. And for them to do that in the show and kind of really illustrate their point with some of the better players of all time, I thought was really interesting.
Me too. And it was just nice seeing Suri's face. I'm like, oh God, I forgot how much I love you.
I know, but they will show that Eric clip probably every season to the end of time. Poor guy.
That poor guy. Like, how do you get over that? How do you get over that? It's just terrible. I mean, I know Chelsea's probably sitting at home like sad because she went home with an idol in her pocket, but that wasn't her fault and she wouldn't have known, you know what I mean, that was coming away. But that was just a terrible, horrible situation that he's going to have to live with for the rest of his life.
Can't escape it even if he tried, because it's on every season of the show.
Every season.
I'm surprised it wasn't in Australian Survivor, like, for some reason.
I know, right? And it comes through, like, it comes up in your head, like, I reckon that's why people are scared to play idols for people, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, because it just comes into your head, like, if I play this idol for someone, I'm going home. It would just really mess with your brain.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny, because the narrative now of Survivors, like, make big moves, but they will always show you that, like, the biggest move of all, which was Eric giving up his immunity, was like an unmitigated disaster. So, like, maybe don't make big moves. Definitely not
maybe
that
don't
move.
Make big moves. Yeah.
But yeah, the art of persuasion, I want to talk about that. So they talked about ego. They showed, like, Parvati, you know, stroking people's egos as she does. Fear, that was funny. That's a good one as well. Rumors, which is like the Sandra specialty, and then this for that, which is what Nora ends up going with. So how do you feel about that? Because you definitely, you know, got your way a lot, blindsided people a lot. What were you kind of using within these kind of tenets that they're putting forward of the art of persuasion? Or do you have your own that you could add?
I mean, a lot of my art of persuasion was thinking about things. So thinking about moves and then really having people around me who trusted me to think about moves and then getting other people to go tell everyone about it so that it never actually came back to me. So I would be like, you know, let's do this, let's do this. Okay, well, you go talk to Harry and you go talk to Daisy and then, and then we'll come back together. And no one really noticed that it was me sometimes who would try and get out of talking to too many people. So I'd talk to, like, the close people around me, but then I would try not to branch out too much because no one can keep their mouth shut. That's the problem when you're playing Survivor. Everyone just tells everyone everything. So you don't want someone to hear, oh, Pia's trying to blindside me, and then it comes back to you and then it's going to be your name on the chopping block, which is what, you know, the biggest fear about the day vote was for me was when, you know, I'm going around talking to Jono and people like that, and I'm thinking, this comes back to me. I'm going to go home for sure. So definitely my art of persuasion was actually getting people to do my dirty work for me.
And that's kind of, I think, comes back to, like, to really, like, broadly translate it to what they were trying to get Nora to do. You kind of suggested make it smaller and see if other people can kind of put those seeds out in. You know, if you go to Jason and maybe if she had, you know, it's really based on social capital, but if she did have a couple of close allies and could say, look, I don't want to put it out too much because it's obviously a difficult role, but I really think I'd be good at the caller for these reasons, and I don't know if I should put myself forward, and kind of get them to be like, maybe Nora would be good for this, you know? And
exactly.
So maybe that would be best.
And also a really good way I found to persuade people to do things was to pretend that you weren't sure about the decision. So say, you know, you'd be like, well, oh gosh, do you think we could vote Simon out? What do you think? Do you think we should? Rather than, you know, and in your mind, you're like, we've got to vote Simon mm-hmm. out. So really just to pretend that you were indecisive so that you got the other person on board to agree with you.
Or to think then, it's their idea even.
Yeah. And then they feel like, oh, you've made the decision together rather than you've gone to them and told them what you want to do. So, you know, the other thing is you have to be really calm, which unfortunately is really difficult for Nora.
Yoga
so
with Nora.
If you're like really frenetic about something, people are going to question it. So you have to be really calm. And unfortunately, that wasn't Nora's bag.
Yeah, I don't know if that would have worked based on her social relationships, but I do think that makes a lot of sense. Like, have her come back, tell the story of how she is, you know, of she can give them the challenge intel, let it sit. Yeah. And then go to a Lauren or someone with impact and say, look, I don't want to put this out to the group because I'm nervous about it. And I know it's a big role, but I just really think like for the tribe, like I know myself, I'm the loudest person here and possibly in the world, you know, and I'm a yoga teacher. I'm an instructor. This is literally my job to instruct people in a calm way. Technically, yeah. We should think like this is what I'm really made to do. And I don't want to take it to the tribe. And I'm not even that sure about it because I'd be putting myself out there. But I kind of want to do it for you guys because I know this is literally my profession and what I should be doing.
Yeah.
And don't let them practice with you because that's where it falls apart. But yeah.
Yeah, a big lie I think she needed, like, you know, say you used to work at a camp or something, like a kids camp, and that was one of the challenges that you did all the time or something like that. I'm really experienced at it, or just something, or you know, it was a scout, so that you can say, I've got experience, I can do it, I'm definitely the right person. And I wouldn't, you've got to do that stuff late, I think.
But
it is hard for Nora because she doesn't have that really close group of people who would back her up.
Then that becomes about knowing where you sit in the tribe and having some self-awareness to know if you can do that. Like, there are other people, like a Lauren, say she went out there, and even though it's just a vote blocker, who probably could say, I think I have the social capital to persuade people.
Yeah.
And just to, you know, obviously I'm going to try and do that if she thinks it's worth it. And you probably, you know, who could have pulled it off and it might have been worth it. But Nora has to sit there and say, like, people aren't just going to believe me. Because even though you can say ego, fear, rumors, all of that, and all of those are tools, but they largely rely on your relationships, as everything a survivor tends to do. And I think that kind of went missing in, like, just talking about the specific parts of persuasion they were talking about. Every example, like, yes, Parvati was stroking these guys' egos, but they also liked her. Yes, Yule used fear to Penna, but he'd worked with Penna before. He knew Penna. He had a working relationship with him, which was very much based on, we're both smart guys, and I know you're going to do what's in your self-interest, so I'm appealing to that. So it's about, as everything in Survivor is, awareness and social relationships first before it becomes about the very flashy things, which is starting rumors and all of that. Unfortunately, Nora didn't have it, and I wish she had known that before making the call. But there are other people who might have had the social relationships who really could have come in there and convinced people, obviously, to be the caller.
Yeah, totally. You're so right. Like, it is about knowing where you sit. Like, you know, even for me with saying, oh, well, I got people to do my dirty work, that's because I worked on those relationships so much that we all trusted each other. But if I was someone who had no allies, I couldn't just walk up to someone and be like, hey, this is what I want to do and you need to go talk to Simon, you know, that kind of thing. But I think that is, and it goes back to the initial problem, is that Nora should just not have said yes because she should have known that she didn't have she doesn't have the collateral. She cannot convince that tribe to make her the caller. She's just not that player. And, you know, it would have been better for her to come back and say there was a challenge and I didn't accept it, something like that. Say, I'm sorry, guys, or just make people feel sorry for her. But, it was just bad gameplay. But maybe she doesn't, because she is so excitable, maybe she doesn't know where she sits. Like, maybe she really thinks that she's just, you know, running the tribe. I mean, I kind of get
but
that
vibe.
But
she did seem to know when her and Jason were on the outs, but then there has been a vote since then that she was included in. She either doesn't know how, like, powerless she is, or she didn't realize how much that would affect this, you know, because they were saying like there are tactics you can use and it's like you can use them, but you need the social capital or the power to do it before you can. That's like the obvious. That's the bread and butter of being able to pull off any of these other persuasion tactics they were talking about. So, you know, she like, okay, anyone can just go and like start a rumor or use fear or do, you know, like actually no, like even this for that. Lex and Boss and Rob were friends in real life when he asked him for that. He wasn't just like a complete random who was like, please save Amber for me. They had a literal personal relationship before the show even started. So every single example they used was very much based on relationships. I think if they said to Nora, like, do you have friends on the tribe because you can't do any of this if people don't want to really work with you and with what you want. And then she either would have said, yes, I have lots of friends and been wrong, or she would have said, like, no, I actually have really felt on the outs and I really only have Jason. And then it could have been like, well, you can't pull off any of these moves. So
yeah, absolutely. And, you know, maybe that would have taught her a better lesson that she really needed to work on those individual relationships.
Mm.
You know, if she maybe she, that would have sort of been something better for her to take away rather than, she sort of just has egg on her face now. She's probably going to be angry, but she's going to go to tribe swap. Who knows? She might hook up with Karishma. They could make magic.
Yeah. I think Karishma will not be able to stand her. Karishma's like, I've been through enough. Please, Nora.
Like, don't do this to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Poor Karishma. Like, how much does she have to deal with now being kind of paired with Nora? But, like, was it too heavy-handed, do you think, to be so harsh, to blindside her in that moment? Be like, you're sitting out of the challenge? Or do you think it was like, I mean, it was necessary that she wasn't the caller because they would have lost by a lot, but did they have to do it like that? Could they not have come to her? But she is still going to a swap, and we have now, like, penalized Lyra for making Karishma feel spare, which I'm sure Nora felt. Could they not have come? It was an amazing TV moment, but is there kind of like credence to saying, look, Nora, like, we just really as a tribe beforehand, we don't want to embarrass you, but we just really don't think, you know, you could, you know, even just don't sit her out. Just say one of us will sit out, but we just don't think you should be the caller. Just make it a little bit less humiliating
less
for her
harsh.
As she's about to go to a swap.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that. What I don't understand is, you know, didn't Nora say I have to be the caller? Like, you, if I'm going to tell you this,
I guess that's true. That she made it so hard for them. She would have just been like, "I, it's in the rules. It's done." Because she did say that. So it's true. She makes it so hard for them to work with her.
Yeah, like she should have said. I would have said at that challenge, I would have said, no, remember I said I have to be the caller, and if I'm not the caller, we're going to get penalized.
But then they would have said to Jeff, like, can she sit out? And Jeff would have been like, Nora can sit out. And then Lara would have been like, what is happening?
Yeah,
right
true. It wouldn't have worked. But something like
that. It was
so
verifiable as well. But it was
it's like she should have said something like, remember I said we had to, you know, something like that. Just fight for it a little bit. But she really didn't fight at all.
Ugh.
I actually think it was smart. I don't think it was smart gameplay because they're going to a tribe swap to really just like cut her off like that. But I do think if they had have let her know, she wouldn't have let up. It would have been just a nightmare around camp.
Mm, I do think she makes it hard because they already threw her the bone. They sent her to IOI, even though she was on the outs, which I think was smart. Like, I know that there's, I will think she might find an idol. It's like, there seems to be quite a core group who could split on maybe a Jason or a Jamal or someone who's out. So let her have what she wants. No one else wants to go. You've thrown her that bone, and they could have maybe been softer with her, but she's coming at them so hard. They have to almost like meet her at that intensity and at the way she's taking it.
And also I would have, I mean, I assume they would have guessed, like I would have guessed that she was going to get an advantage if she's been that full on about having to be the caller and she's gone to Island of the Idols. It doesn't make sense. You'd be like, she's going to get an idol if she becomes a caller, so we cannot let her do that. But there was a nicer way to say that, like, hey, we've had a discussion, we're really sorry, but you're not the caller today, but you can be part of the challenge. But
even at the challenge, even if you can't do it before, because she's going to be like, that's not how it works, like, you have to challenge her, you could say,
I would have waited till challenge, but I would have done it with a bit more tact than that, you know.
They were so offered by that point, though. They were just like, nope. Like, you could tell it had been building up in Lauren for like 48 hours.
Oh, my God. I literally feel like, you know how when you're watching Survivor, you're like, well, you should have done this, you should have done that. But someone's driving you literally insane. Like, you can't control yourself. And I feel like that was one of those moments when Lauren's like, I've just got to get this woman out of my head. So, look, I mean, I think they made the right call, definitely, because it seems pretty obvious to me that she was going to get something by getting that position.
Yeah, I mean, the Vokai dynamics, just to quickly touch on them, they, you know, we did see a bit of it last week. It's like Dan, Jamal, Nora. I tend to think, you know, Nora was just like straight going home, right? Like, if they had the tribal council.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I really think so. But then you never know, you know?
Yeah, like we thought that every time. So.
And this is like this crazy blindside game. I mean, it's making up for all the Island of the Idols nonsense because it's just this crazy blindside game where I actually don't know. I feel like anyone could have gone home at this point. But, you know, I'm looking forward to getting to know a few of the people on Vokai Tribe because I feel like we haven't sort of had as much of them in the last, obviously because I haven't gone to Tribal Council. Like Janet, I feel like has been really quiet. So, you know, I feel like she's playing, it seems like she's playing a pretty good game. But I'm sort of looking forward to sort of seeing what her game's like.
Yeah, we don't know, like, I think the very specific dynamics. Like, we have seen some stuff, but I think, like, Tommy, Kelly, Janet, Dan, Lauren, and I feel like Jack's been brought a bit back into the fold. So that kind of feels like a core group. And then Jason, yes. I think, is reintegrating pretty well. He obviously won the challenge. I think that was like a really good thing for him.
Yeah, it was definitely a good moment for him. Like, you know, he's been on the outs and he was really good in that challenge. And so I feel like that can really change people's opinion of you when you, mm-hmm. when you really rally in a challenge. And he's sort of got this perception as this goofy kind of, you know, awkward guy, but he was really calm and fantastic in that challenge.
And they backed him as well. And then he wasn't pulling an aura. Like, they backed him and then he pulled it off. And I think that was good for him.
Yeah, it was great for him. And, you know, having that little moment with Jamal, like seeing him feel on the outs and then finding an idol.
Yeah.
That was a really good, kind of little just moment with him, just talking about getting to know him. And he was smart. You know, he's on the outs. He stayed back at camp because it's really hard to look for idols without getting a target on your back. So he just stayed back at camp and he's lucky to find. I mean, how do people find these things? I cannot tell you.
You need one. So there you go.
Well, true.
That's how you do it. You don't find one. You don't need one.
There is that thing where you go, oh, God, I could go look now. But, you know, I knew that my strength was always being around camp and sticking with people, so playing this socially. But I'd still go out and look. And honestly, I looked everywhere. Ross and I spent hours together looking, and we found nothing. And then you see those people just walking past idols and finding them. You're like, dang it, what's happening?
Well, that's what the whole thing with idol finding is like. It's not just – like, go look. It's an exchange. You're making a value exchange of, like, this is now what's worth my time rather than being with the group. And that's why I'm in two minds with Jamal thing, because he does find the idol. He may have needed the idol. And even in finding it, though, like, part of me wants to think everyone else is going and frolicking on the raft. Like, you've just been left out of the vote. A lot of me is like, go to the raft. Go
totally integrate socially. Yeah.
You know, that's the choice you make, though.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely always made those social choices. Just always stick with, if there is a group of people going somewhere, you want to be with that group. Like, you don't want that group to be talking about you behind your back. If you see two people going off, not as stressful, but you don't want to be kind of sitting back at camp on your own. It's just not a good feeling. So he was lucky that he found that idol, definitely.
If he doesn't find it, he looks like such an idiot that he's like given up that social time, but he does happen to find it. So it kind of becomes results oriented. Even in finding it, part of me is like, take that social choice. But for Australian Survivor, 100%, I think take the social choice every time, especially if you're that type of player, and the social players tend to do better on Australian Survivor. But then for US Survivor, I think I'm maybe being a bit idealistic, because the last few seasons, having an idol is probably more relevant than having social relationships. Like, all of the past few winners, the only thing they have in common is that they had idols, and a lot of the time needed the idols voted out. So possibly, you know, probably and almost definitely the idol was the most important thing for him to find. But in like my most idealistic world, I have to think going to the raft and reintegrating socially after being left out of a vote for me is what I would wish would be the more important thing in Survivor. But unfortunately, I don't think it actually is in US Survivor right now.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think in US Survivor, it's really way more socially acceptable to be looking for the idols, and just really, it's a really important thing that you have to do. And I also feel like social capital only takes you so far in American Survivor. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I feel like you can really forge really tight relationships in Australian Survivor that are very rare in American Survivor. So I'd be looking for idols all the time. The weird thing about Australian Survivor is there are certain people who look all the time, and then when they stop, you know the idol's been found.
Interesting.
So you're like, I'm not going to waste time now, you know, because Harry's not.
And it was every
anymore.
Time it was Harry.
Harry, Luke looked a lot, you know, Dave looked a lot, but you know that everyone stopped looking, and you knew a couple of them were talking about finding the idol or finding something. So you're like, there's no point in sort of spending all that time away from a camp. Whereas I feel like there are just idols everywhere in American Survivor. So I'd be really looking for an idol, because you do need one to win. And it is such a different game.
Yeah, in US Survivor, the jury is like, why weren't you voted out to save yourself with an idol? You know, it used to be like, it should be an amazing thing to make it, especially day 50 in Australian Survivor, but 39 days in American Survivor without being voted out. No winner had ever received the most votes before Mike Holloway in season 30. And now multiple winners have been literally voted out. Chris Underwood, Ben saved himself multiple times. Like, so many winners required idols. And for me as a juror, I would look at that as like a bad thing. Like, okay, so you found something, good job. You had the read to play it, good job. But I would still prefer that you had the social capital to not receive the majority of votes in a game that's about getting, you know, not getting the majority of votes. But now the jury seems to look at it like, that's a more impressive thing. Like, wow, what a flashy play, you saved yourself, and wow, to the person who didn't get the votes, why weren't you a big enough threat to get the votes? Like, what does that say about your weaknesses in the game? So it's just the way the jury is looking at it that makes idols and saving yourself with an idol much more valuable than having the social relationships to not need an idol for the entire game.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I definitely used that in my final tribal. Was like, well, I didn't need one because, I played such a good social game and I had people loyal to me, whereas that would not fly in American Survivor. You would have to find one. You'd have to be a threat at some point and you'd have to almost go home. Whether you save yourself with fire or something, you need that one thing to be able to win for sure.
Yeah, because it's a kind of like a more broader discussion, but we talk a lot about, well, I talk a lot about how women aren't winning Survivor as much in US Survivor.
There was just an article. Did you see that?
I did. And it's something that I've spoken about. It was on Entertainment Weekly in terms of the fact that women aren't winning and the way the juries aren't really crediting a more beta type of play and also, you know, idols and all the mechanisms. And I talk about that. And I do want to see a woman win because I haven't seen in ages. And it's a little bit invalidating to watch US Survivor and feel like your whole gender is kind of, you know, boxed out of the win. That's deflating. But beyond that, what I actually want to see more than a woman winning is anyone winning who didn't have an idol. What a novelty. I'm not sure it can happen anymore in US Survivor, or if it does, it's a rarity, because I think since Tyson, every winner has had an idol or a legacy advantage in Sarah's case, except Michelle, who did have a remove a juror advantage. So every winner's had an advantage. Pia, you're like a novelty. You know, Australian Survivor is different, but I love seeing that. I want to see Gavin from last season, or Mike White, especially, who I thought played an amazing game. These were people who controlled the game with subtle social play. Those are obviously men, but it's a different type of play, even more than I want to see a woman win, which I do want to, and I want to feel like my gender can be validated in my favorite show. But even more than that, I want to know that there can be diverse and dynamic types of play winning. And that is people who didn't find an idol or didn't require a challenge win to get through, or even, and this will never happen, I really believe that, but I wish it did, I wish the person who doesn't win fire and doesn't win the challenge at Final Four and is taken through could win the game. And I don't think that could happen. But like Natalie Anderson, for example, one of her best moves was at Final Four, Jacqueline wins immunity and Missy and Keith, you know, other two votes. So now Jacqueline would be sending Missy and Keith to fire and Natalie would be taken through. And the jury now would look at that like, why are you so weak that you were taken through? Why aren't you enough of a threat that you were put to fire or that you won the challenge? And it's like, no, that's a brilliant social play. And I wish that we could get a jury that would credit that person if necessary. You know, some people are goats, but other people might get through on their social capital. I wish we could have a jury that would credit someone for that.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. Like, I think the whole idea that you have to be a super strong out there player who gets a target on their back and then saves themselves with an idol, that's not great gameplay. That means that you needed saving. Mm-hmm. So, you know, exactly. And for someone like Natalie who gets taken through, that's because she's probably working on the people that are taking her, you know, probably working on everyone and in everyone's ear saying, this is why you should take me, which is what I did a lot. You know, I worked a lot on Baden, a lot on Harry, like talking down up everyone else's game, talking down my own. That stuff for me is true survivor, and you know, idols and all that other stuff, that's the fun of it. But I don't know whether an idol should be the reason, or you know, I mean, I do love fire because, you know, it's fun to watch, but I don't know whether those things, it's just we value very different things in different survivors, and I wish it was more diverse in American Survivor as well, you know, that we really didn't have to value this sort of massive masculine gameplay. I feel like it's a masculine gameplay that is really valued over. Yeah,
it's not a coincidence that, you know, it's a rarity now for women to win.
Right.
But for me, when I saw Mike White win, I mean, Mike White lose, or Gavin, you know, I think he would have been okay when I think Mike White actually was the best player of that season. Gavin,
so
just,
do I.
Gavin was just like, in comparison to Chris Underwood, who'd been voted out and who like exemplified every single aspect of the modern game that I don't like, which is that challenge wins are most important. And he was also, you know, voted out and saved with Lauren's with Lauren's idol. He was saved with his own idol that they were given. So he still received the majority of votes in the few tribal councils that he was at, not to harp on too much about this. So he had every part of it. Like, he was saved by an idol. He was voted out and came back with a challenge. Like, he went to fire, like literally every single mechanism.
And that's what's seen as such like that's seen as a winning game over there. And I don't know why, because it's really, I mean, I know it is outplay, outlast, but really.
Now it's just outplay, 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 right?
Yeah. Now it's outplay, outplay. And also like, player losing, you know, like you get dealt a losing hand, or you play a sort of a losing, do some losing gameplay, and then you get saved by you know, a piece of jewelry. I don't know. To me, it's just not that exciting that that's the only way it goes over there. Like, I think that, you know, I've talked about if I played American Survivor, you would have to switch up your gameplay so much. But, and it takes away the idea that the best fun I had playing Survivor was that you really have to follow your instincts and really read people and work out where you sit. And it takes away the fun of that, like that real strategy of playing Survivor, because it really makes it more of a game of luck as well. And, you know, it just seems to be men that find idols a lot more frequently than women. I don't know if that's right, but it feels like
it's like 87%.
Yeah, right. Because they're climbing trees and they're going out, you know, sometimes that, you know, the machete's not that easy for me to get up high because I'm not tall. So sometimes the guys will go out just because they're taller to get really high palm fronds and stuff. And, you know, I just feel like they're sort of scouting the forest more than we are.
Yeah, it's just a different type of play to value. And, like, look, if someone's going to idle their way to the end, like when Mike Holloway did it, I mean, it's not the most fascinating season, but it was like, okay, well, we haven't seen this in a while. You know, we've seen people win out, but for him to be, like, completely immune from, like, Final Eight or whatever it was like a novelty. So it's like, okay, well, that's interesting.
Or immunity with their way to the end.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, some people do that gameplay, which, you know, is fun. Like, I know that's sort of what Luke wanted to do, is immunity his way to the end, which would have been fun to watch, but it's just – that's one way to play the game. Like, it's not sort of, you know, we don't have to sort of idolize this one way of playing the game. It really, it could be more diverse. And I feel like Australian Survivor is more diverse, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to see it every so often, if that's the culture of that season. But it's unfortunate that it's like every season. Like, the Entertainment Weekly article, it was interesting because it kind of put into words what I guess said on Twitter and been thinking about for so long, which is just that, yeah, I mean, the game is kind of stacked against one type of gameplay, and it's not, I talk about it a lot, but it's not necessarily women versus men. I do think it can be often aggressive versus non-aggressive, and that just tends to work out as women versus men. I just really want to see a winner who that's never found an idol. That's all. I think that'll be a novelty. Like, let's even take gender out of it. That's all I'm asking. Like, didn't rely on an idol, didn't rely on a challenge win, and somehow didn't make fire or win the challenge at Final Four. I don't think that will ever happen.
No, it just does feel like we're getting the same kind of player at the end every time in American Survivor, and it's boring. And that's why I was sad to see Chelsea go, because, you know, she was a really good little player. Like, she was going to go far, I thought, and just I didn't feel like she deserved to go. And I feel like sometimes these strong young women are actually really – they really get cut off early too.
The thing I found really interesting about the women in this season, and there's a lot of questions, are women finally going to win this season? It's like, firstly, no, Tommy's going to win. But also, but even the women, but the women this season, like, they've really come to play. But even if they do win, I think it'll be a more masculine type of game that wins. Like, I still don't think that beta play will be credited by the show. I do think that women have a chance. Like, look at, you know, Lauren's been leading the blind side in big moves, and you know, these women have been beasting the challenges, and Chelsea did find the idol, unfortunately. That's gone now. But she made fire, and Janna made fire. Like, all of these very masculine, you know, broadly masculine skills that US Survivor credits, the women have taken on. So it's not like, wow, the game has really changed where diverse skills are kind of rewarded. It's more just like women have realized what the game is offering, what the game requires of you, and have had to kind of rise to that more aggressive game style, even if it might be atypical for who they are as a person, even if it may put more of a target on their back. And obviously Chelsea has gone home now. I'm not sure if that's really connected, but she has gone home, and they have to kind of almost play out of their skin and play this type of gameplay that the game now requires of them, even if it's not right for their demographic, even if it's not necessarily socially acceptable for a woman as much as a man, but they know that they have to bring the game to that level because this one type of game is consistently being rewarded with a win in US Survivor. And I credit them for that because they're right in that, but it's also unfortunate that it has to be taken to that place and that they can't just kind of elevate their own skills, their own personal skills in the game to win in their own way.
Absolutely. Like, you know, it's definitely, I mean, that's why I was so excited to see this female alliance, because I thought maybe the females are going to come together and they're strong. It's like the 47s didn't work, but, like, you know, maybe these women are going to band together, they're going to be strong, and they're going to take the guys down. Like, I really thought that was going to happen, but unfortunately they imploded, because it is, I'm happy for any time of gameplay to win. Like, you know, for me, my gameplay evolved as I was out there, because I had an idea of what I was going to do, but it really evolved just to survive and to get through and then to make blindsides at the right time. But, you know, I think it takes away the instinct, like the fun of that, just following your instinct and getting to the end by just making move by move and working out what's going on around you. Whereas here, I feel like it's just so aggressive. I have to play aggressively. I have to find idols. I have to blindside people quickly. And it's just not as interesting because it's just repetitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it might be like playing more of like a sport. The sport is, and the criteria is, play in this type of way to win. And if you're more naturally suited to that, if you're, you know, Chris Underwood or, you know, the players who've, Ben Rehberg and the players that have done really well with that, you know, you're already leaning towards that. And if you're not, you're going to have to rise to that level of what the game is now requiring of you rather than what it used to be, which is kind of like this pretty blank canvas. And you just kind of choose your skills and what you, you know, in a very broad context, which is what Survivor should be like, okay, I am the best idol finder. So that is how I'm going to win. Or, you know what? That's not going to be my skill set based on demographic, based on who I am as a person. I'm a social person. So I'm going to win through social skills and just kind of know yourself and use those skills to win. And now it's like, know yourself and then change yourself to be what the game requires of you, which is pretty slim right now. Like, it's a very narrow thing that they're requiring of people.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's sort of like someone's written a rule book and now everyone has to follow it. It's really taken the instinct out of it. So you never know, like, maybe this season, maybe doing all these massive blindsides and being bitten on the ass will come, you know, maybe that will change it, because I'd just love to see someone, you know, like an Elizabeth or someone like that win, or really just, you know, have a really great player who's a social player, but also strong as well, you know, rather than the same sort of guy winning every time.
Totally agree. And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in education into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
And we are back. All right. Well, I want to get to the chizzy. And on Global Survivor, we're still going to be doing... Sorry, Survivor Global. I already got the name wrong. It's the first episode of this. On Survivor... I hope I haven't said it wrong before this. On Survivor Global, we are still going to do the chizzy. And the whole point of the chizzy is then to, like, kind of reward people throughout the season, to have leaderboards and kind of track it. We can't do that because I'm only doing intermittent coverage. So it's kind of just like a fun thought exercise that I still think is really worthwhile. So we're going to do the chizzy. So take it away, Jacob Sagal-Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
I am just so happy to hear the theme song again. That's kind of why I'm doing this coverage. That's kind of what I'm trying to get with it, because I love the chizzy theme song and it's my ringtone. But we're going to give 3 points, 2 points, and 1 point to the three best players, in our opinion, of the episode. So for me, I'm going to give my 3 points to Elizabeth. And I think we spoke about it a lot already, but I love where she is socially. I love that she's in the center. I appreciate that she didn't put her foot down repetitively to get her way in the pre-merge, which is like, at some point you just kind of got to let go, especially, you know, in certain demographics to do that. So I appreciated all of that from her. For her and Elaine to find a way for Tom not to be alienated, I thought was great. But I'm going to put Elaine at 2 points, but I'm going to give Elizabeth that 3 points because of that subtle brilliance of just kind of pinning it all on Elaine, not liking the move, but always saying yes, definitely being open to it. But then coming back and being like, look, I spoke to Elaine and she has her issues with it. Subtle, but brilliant. So 3 points to her, 2 points to Elaine for all similar reasons. And as well, as we've said, concealing how much she knows. If Sandra, who's obviously a great reader, is watching her and thinking she's out of the loop, she must be doing a pretty good acting job that I think you can appreciate, Pia.
That's the one thing I really enjoyed about that tribal was when Sandra didn't really get Elaine's game. I was like, oh, Elaine, you're really clever.
Yeah. And the point was hard for me because, you know, considered Tom, as I said, I thought he was more important here than was shown, but I think it's largely through his connections to Elizabeth and Elaine who I've credited here. Jamal found the idol was good, but I still feel weird about giving him points for that when I just, like, instinctively I want him to go to the raft. And I know, it, as we've spoken about now at length, that might not be the right move, but, you know, if he doesn't find the idol, he just has given up that social time. So he's lucky he found it and he worked hard to find it. But that's a value judgment that I kind of don't really want to credit here. I can't give Missy or Aaron really any of the credit as the architects of a move I really didn't like. I mean, Aaron we barely spoke about, but why was he going for Dean? Like, Missy's the one who went for Chelsea and Aaron was the one going for Dean? A boy? Why? Like, I don't I don't get it.
I don't get it.
No. So no points there for any of those people.
It's actually weird we didn't talk about him because he was. Yeah. Really, I mean, him and Missy have become really close. And
I think Missy took all the heat, but Aaron also wasn't great.
Yeah. No, he wasn't great at all.
Like, I mean, you have to credit him because he was super on the ice with Ronnie and he has reintegrated. Obviously, before this week, he wasn't an option last week with the Vince vote either. He does seem to have a really good connection with Missy. He seems to have much more of a pull than he should have been coming back from episode one than we would have thought. But then for him to use that power to do something that I don't understand, to go for Dean, like, I see him and Missy as the reasons why Karishma wasn't voted out. And I think Karishma absolutely needed to go. So when she dooms them all, they're the people I'll be blaming. Yeah. So a point I'm actually going to give to Jason for rising to and kind of succeeding in that hero role and pretty dicey situation, you know, that he was in a couple of episodes ago. I think that's pretty good social capital to gain, and the tribe clearly supported him. And I also know that he wasn't on the raft like Jamal wasn't, but I do feel like with the challenge win, you know, he did bring back that social capital. So Jamal, you know, progressed in this episode by finding the idol, but Jason progressed, I think, by kind of getting in really well with his tribe through doing something difficult in doing the caller role and actually pulling it off. So I'm going to credit that with a point.
So this is unbelievable, but I've given all my points for exactly the same.
That's how we know we're right. I actually struggled with it. So that's actually with Jason especially.
I struggled
especially.
With the one, like the number one point. So I gave 3 to Elizabeth, obviously, just because I thought she was super clever. And her, I think her social collateral in this game, she's really, really socially just doing a great job. And I think the fact that she has connected with Elaine is a really great thing. And she was really putting Elaine in it with still sort of keeping herself like this happy-go-lucky lady who's just really trying to play the game but trying to make good moves. So mm-hmm. I loved her gameplay. I think she's going to be one to watch for sure because she's really likable, but she's playing hard and I don't think anyone knows it yet. Mm-hmm. And then 2 points, obviously, to Elaine. Yes, because of that relationship, but I think, you know, Elaine had a lot to say when it was going to be Dean. And I think the fact that they had to flip and just go with the numbers and they did it quietly and they did it without anyone knowing that they really weren't into that vote was a really clever move. And I think Elaine the same, like she seems to have a lot of really good friendships on that tribe. Mm-hmm. And because Sandra didn't know what Sandra felt like she didn't know what was going on, which is super smart. Like I pretended all the time I didn't know what was going on to people. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's really good gameplay. So I think the two of them just definitely are my favorite players at the moment. And then I was the same. I gave one to Jason. I really thought about Jamal. Like I went, well, he found an idol. But, you know, I don't want to just credit people finding idols because finding idols is a bit of luck and he doesn't need the point. So I'm going to give it to Jason because he really rallied in that challenge. And I feel like that challenge made people look at him a different way. And he's been on the outs and, you know, really his only friend was Nora for a while. So it was a really good moment for him. So I think, you know, I got to credit good, like, outplay, you know, really just a good moment of him playing really well in a challenge because that is part of the game. So, yeah, definitely I'm the same. So we are right.
We're correct. Sure. Sold
we're
it.
Correct. Yeah.
Completely validated each other. Like, Jason and Nora both started off super on the outs, and I think Nora has made that worse.
Totally.
And Jason has, I think, improved. So in terms of that path, like, kind of diverging, you know.
Yeah. So I'd like to see, you know, how socially he's going to go at a tribe swap and see if maybe that really great performance in a challenge will give him some confidence and maybe he can really, you know, come together and find a good alliance.
Yeah. But Jason, my mom loved it. But I watched it with my Jewish mother. Then he quoted his Jewish mother. She's his biggest fan. And you get it because you're Italian. Like, they're the same thing. Like,
Exactly. It's a vibe that you can't get unless you're part of it.
It's so true. All right. We have some questions from the listeners for you. Derek Winchester asks, who do you think the audience is sleeping on 4 episodes in? Like, who is playing the smiling assassin hidden now only to strike post-merge when the time comes?
Oh, goodness. I mean, no one's really being a smiling assassin because everyone's out there being an assassin. Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
I feel like everyone's being really quite openly assassinating people. Like, maybe Kelly. Like, you know, I think Kelly's smart and I think she's possibly underplaying her game a little bit. Like when she came back and cried after the Island of the Idols and was, you know, pouring out her bag, I knew that wasn't her personality. I knew that she was doing it for show. And it seems like she's sort of pretending she's a little bit weaker than she is. So possibly Kelly. And, you know, Elizabeth's still playing a pretty nice game. So I think Elizabeth could come out and really just, if she comes out and really starts making some big moves and turning on people, she could definitely be Smiling Assassin. Not that it always has to be a woman, but, you know, we're just female strong at the moment. So this is
good. Yeah. This is a super feminist podcast.
Yeah.
I think that people have been sleeping on Elizabeth. Like, we just gave her 6 chizzy points, so we're not sleeping on her. But I haven't heard a lot of talk, you know, and I, you know, listened to a couple of podcasts before this podcast, and I didn't hear a lot about, like, what Elizabeth was doing. It was very much, like, all the focus on Missy, good and bad, depending on how you took the move, which is obviously, like, that she made a super aggressive move. But for me, Elizabeth, and as we've said, Elaine, Elaine's not, like, a you know, a smiling assassin, because she's just by virtue of who she is and the fact that, you know, she was almost first boot, so maybe that'll have some similarities. But she's a big character. She's been described as maybe, like, the Rupert. Like, she's not going to be under the radar. But Elizabeth could be behind her. Maybe Elaine could be the godmother. Elizabeth could be the smiling assassin. And maybe they're the power couple no one's noticing because they're not a young guy and a young girl.
Exactly. I mean, you know what? Elizabeth can hide behind Elaine because Elaine's so likable that eventually someone's going to go, you know what, that's too much of a threat. Let's get rid of her. And if you've got someone in front of you that they're going to shoot first, that's the way to get through. Because then you've got a bit of time to try and work out how to save yourself.
Yeah. But I'm also intrigued as well to see more of the other tribe, as we've said, because they once, you know, Janet, what's she doing? We don't know. Like, these people could really have a lot going for them.
Yeah, exactly.
And speaking of, Brad Strudwick asks, what does Pia think about people like Tommy trying to play an under-the-radar game like her? Can it work as effectively in the US format with things like Island of the Idol votes have sprung on tribe? So we've obviously spoken about the different formats, but Tommy's game is something we haven't spoken so much about. He is definitely socially connecting and isn't relying on, like, searching for idols. What do you think of his game?
Look, I think, you know, we've spoken a lot about, yeah, how you have to sort of have a bigger game to win American Survivor. But I think to get him through to the merge, I think he's playing a really clever game. He's obviously physically strong, so he's just playing nice guy. And I think that's going to take a target off his back so he can get to the merge and then he can start playing harder if he plays harder there. I'm enjoying his game. I think, you know, it's a really we haven't seen that much of it, but I think it's a good game. I think if he was out there making big moves now, he's going to go home.
Yeah, and his gameplay seems to be very considered. We always hear from him, like, I don't want to go to Island of the Idols. I don't want to take out – he didn't want to alienate Jamal and Jack, which I think I understood at the time. Like, he obviously seemed really close with them, wanted to take out Nora, who could come back to doom them like Karishma here, and they didn't have the time then to take her out. But also – it seems like once Molly was the vote, didn't put his foot down, much like Elizabeth and Elaine, and was like, this is now the vote. I'll go with what you want. I don't want to, like, insert myself too much. So I do like his game very much.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for strong men, you don't really need to insert yourself in the game too much when you're before merge or before merge, really, because if you're good at challenges, people are going to want to keep you around. So just lay low, keep your mouth shut, and then get to merge, and then you can really start fighting. So I think he's playing a clever game. But at some point, he's going to need to find an idol, start a fire, do something crazy, otherwise he ain't going to win.
You better be finding, like, 5 idols, Tommy. Like, I like what you're doing, like, right now, but I'll all come to Australia.
Go hunting. Come to Australia.
We welcome you with open arms. So this is very, you know, very separate from this, but Edward Morris, the last question I have, asked, the first 8 Australian All-Stars have been announced. Any thoughts on them? So for anyone who hasn't seen this, the first 8 of 24 All-Stars for next year have been announced. So it's we got Phoebe, Flick, Brooke, Nick Iadanza, who people might know, and we've got Matt Rogers, Tarzan, Henry, and David, the Golden God from last season. Those 8, how cool was that?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously I knew that David was going back out because we're really good mates. So I'm just super excited to see his game, see whether he plays the same, whether he changes it up. I'm like, I said to him, no matter what you do, just make sure you're as fun as you were the first time, because it was amazing television. So, I think that's a great group of people. Definitely. Yeah. Looking forward to seeing. I mean, obviously I know a couple. But yeah, I think it's great. And it's good to see, you know, someone from my tribe and someone who I said to Dave, you know, it makes me feel better about blindsiding you that you're going and getting another chance. Because, I mean, he was such a champ about his blindside. Like, he rang me straight after he saw it. And because he saw it early because he was going to play. And he rang me and he was like, I loved it so much. Congratulations. You're a champ. Like, what a great guy. What a great player. Understands the game. Like, he's a legend.
So what day did Dave get voted out?
It was the second vote after.
So it's like the mid-30s. Like he wins US Survivor. Like that's the problem with Dave. He can't go back onto Australian Survivor.
Exactly.
He had an idol. If he just plays that idol correctly, he's already making fire. He won the game. Like
exactly. Done.
I said final like, three, get all the votes.
I'm pretty sure he's like, he's got American citizenship or something. I don't know what it is. He lives over there. Like,
oh my God.
Play that next. But yeah, no, I've definitely taken a lot of the guilt away from me blindsiding him as hard as I did because I'm glad he had another chance because he deserves it.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had the chance to comment on this on a podcast. Like, Nick was, you know, the International Survivor host, the know-it-alls before me. He gave it to me. He's a very good friend of mine. He was involved in my proposal. So he didn't propose to me, but he was a part of my fiancé recruited him. So this is crazy for me. I've never had a friend play Survivor before. I'm too invested in Survivor as it is, as everyone can tell. And now I have a literal friend who I care so much about playing the game, which will be an experience that I'm excited and scared for. So, I'm putting it out now. We love Dave. Dave is incredible television. But yeah. RHAP Nation is going to come out for Nick. Like, I really, I mean, you know, people have to come out for Nick. So that is amazing to me.
Yeah.
And it's a great group. Like, this first group that's been announced, Phoebe, icon, you know, Henry.
Yeah, she's awesome.
You know, Flick, Brooke, they're both great players. They'd be very high in winner contention for me with Australian Survivor as well. Matt Rogers was a huge player. Tarzan's a little random. But
yeah, right?
The eight, like that's an amazing first group.
That's just the lovable. That's just the love. We need someone lovable in there. So we chucked out. Yeah, we need a Rupert.
Yeah. I'm so, excited.
I think it's a great group. I mean, Matt, you know, like it'll be interesting to see whether he learned from the mistakes that he made in. I feel like in the first season he was such a great player, but he got so paranoid that he started eating his young. And so, you know, it'd be interesting to see whether he learned from that and he comes back and plays a different game because his game was really interesting.
Yeah, I think people forget how fascinating Matt Rogers was, like the first god, you know, not the first, there's so many godfathers, but he was a godfather and he ran the game. I think he won the Danzy at the time. Nick, I wonder if that was a connection. Nick gave him the points to win what was the Danzy, which is now the Chizzy. So he played a really good game and was taken out in like spectacular fashion. He's fascinating. And Henry, like, I mean, we haven't even, like, he's, I think, one of the more entertaining players that the show's had.
Yeah.
And he's such an, he invented the Chizzy. There's so many Chizzy connections.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really? You know what I think will be interesting is, you know, definitely as far as it goes at the moment to win Australian Survivor, you definitely need to play under the radar because Australians don't like people who just, too in your face, right? But because those are all returning players, I think, you know, a bigger, you could, it'll be interesting because I think there'll be bigger plays and I think a bigger player could win. Someone who's, you know, plays a harder game could definitely win this one because everyone's going to go out there and they're going to fight really hard. Like I wouldn't go out and play the same game. I could play a completely different game. I mean, I'd still follow my instincts, but I think everyone's going to do the same.
And look at the first eight that we have. I mean, what hardcore players like Phoebe, Nick, Matt, you know, Henry and Dave, like these are snakes beyond snakes. So if they set the tone and the culture and maybe some of the other people that have yet to be announced, it could be a very, you know, high, you know, fast paced big move season. And we'll have to see how the culture is kind of decided by that.
Yeah, I think it will really, I've got a feeling it will really be a different kind of game. And you know what? Everyone's going to be fighting to the death. I'm nervous for them.
Yeah.
I think it'll be way more aggressive and way more intense because, you know, it's very different. Even playing with someone who'd played before, like the knowledge that you have if you played before is a massive advantage. So everyone's going to be in that boat and some people have lasted longer than others in the game. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I couldn't physically do it again, but God, it'd be fun to go out there and do it and like shake it up in another way, but I'm still recovering.
Yeah. I mean, David and any of the other season fours who haven't been announced, like, it was what, like a couple of months apart?
I think it was 6 weeks. I think it was 6 weeks from the time we finished to the time that they dropped on the beach. Yeah.
That's just wrong.
Unfathomable to me. Yeah. I can't even think about it.
Yeah. And then also 6 weeks is like you would get to the swap in Australian Survivor. It's like such a long game.
No.
You know,
yeah.
That's a lot. So super excited for that. And like love Dave, love Henry, love so many of them, but like hashtag Team Nick forever.
I'm definitely on Team Nick as well, but I did promise Dave I'd jump on the Golden God train.
Yeah. I mean so many good ones. And Henry as well. Like Phoebe.
Yeah.
All of them are great. All right. Well, that is all that I have. What is the hashtag? I have hashtag yoga with Nora, because I feel like that's a money-making venture that Dan needs to get on, and like super high-intensity yoga being yelled at me.
I think yoga with Nora or caffeine yoga.
Caffeine yoga. Yeah, it's a different, you know, yoga can get a little boring.
It's a different type of yoga.
Get something different happening. But Pia, this was just so much fun. What a fun first episode of Survivor Global. I think I got the name.
Thanks for having me. It was a blast. My husband's sick of me talking about Survivor, so it was nice to talk about someone who actually wants to talk about it.
I always want to talk about it. I'm constantly talking about it. Pia, where can people find you on social media if they aren't already following you? And like, what are they doing if that's the case?
I'm underscore Pia Miranda on Twitter and Instagram. And I do like to tweet a little bit about American Survivor. So I think I'll ramp it up as it gets more exciting. But I definitely like to have chats with people. And if anyone ever has any questions about gameplay, you know, I'm always up for that. I'm still answering questions about my game, which is really fun too.
Yeah. Well, okay. So when is the next episode of Survivor Global going to be, and who will be the guest? I'm sure people are wondering, and to answer that question, I don't know. Like, I'm kind of winging this. I know I joke about it a lot, about how I have to stop talking about Survivor and really plan my wedding, but like, it really is getting soon and kind of like overwhelmingly anxiety inducing. So I'm kind of doing what I can. I don't know, maybe in a couple of weeks. I don't know. You're going to have to pay attention to the feeds and my social media, because we're going to get some good guests. I've literally not planned anything, but I'm sure we'll make it work. So I'm sorry that I don't have more information for people, but we'll be checking in throughout the season, literally around my actual wedding people. So this is something that I'm doing. Follow me at Shannon Gaze to make sure you don't miss, you know, any of that, the question threads, when that's coming up, and all the announcements, and subscribe. So this podcast is on the Survivor Island of the Idol RHAP feed, if you just want to subscribe to that. On the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed, it's still there with all the international content. And reality TV or Hap-Ups, where all my podcasts have been as well. So kind of pick your poison or subscribe to all of them. You know, with the new podcast coming out, please do like rate, tell friends about it if they're into it. You know, just leave a review. Anything you can do to help the show would be amazing. Another thing, as I briefly mentioned before, is that I interviewed Survivor South Africa series director Leroux Bouta this week. And that interview is up in your feeds. And it's so good. Like, honestly, chills to hear someone who's running Survivor talk about the game. He views the game so amazingly well. Like, Pia, I'm going to send you the season. Survivor South Africa.
I love it.
It's so good. And he's,
I can't wait, actually. That's going to be my next thing.
You have to. Like, it's honestly amazing. And he's such a big reason of why. I mean, he's literally the series director. So to hear his take on it was just unbelievable, and just one of my favorite podcasting moments. So just highly recommend everyone checks that out. And I also wanted to thank our new theme song writers. Jacob Sager-Wine's theme was leading all of that, and that featured Libby Chai, Anna Fedosova, Nikki Ishay Marciano, Pia Virolainen, and Lucy Ventress. So that was a lot of voices, a lot of different accents, really captured the very multicultural and global thing we're doing with Survivor right now on Survivor Global. But thank you so much again, Pia, for coming on, being my first guest. It was such a fun time, and I'm just so pumped up after a couple of weeks off to be talking Survivor again.
Me too.
Thank you so much. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thanks to everyone for listening, and I will see you next time.
Bye. See you later. Bye. Have a good wedding.
Really got to plan that.